brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We have futurist trends guru Gerald Salente joining us coming up in 1 hour. Then in the fourth hour today, business specialist, stock market inventor. He's invented some of the major systems used on the stock market. Journalist Max Kaiser will be joining us for an hour to take your phone calls. So that is our guest for you today. I have some other really important guests, informative guests, coming up later in the week as well. A lot of news that developed over the weekend and just this morning, and I'm going to attempt, I say attempt because there's so much of it, to not get too long-winded on any one subject, but to cover most of the news here in the first hour and then go back through it in more detail throughout the additional 3 hours that elapse after that, and to have open phones today. Now, Salente may be with us an hour. He may be with us just 30 minutes, depending on his schedule. If he's with us the full hour, we'll open phones up in the second half if you have any questions for the futurist, for the predictor, for the individual who has a really good track record of predicting what is coming up and what's happening. Remember last week we wrote a story at prisonplanet.com where Salente had gone on Fox News saying total depression by 2012, absolute breakdown of society, that the there's been a coup by Wall Street to take over the United States. I mean, anybody who just reads industry publications and financial publications knows that. But so much of the public still don't realize how deep or how hot the water is that we're all in. Salente predicts revolution, food riots, tax rebellions by 2012. Trend forecaster, renowned for being accurate in the past, says the America will cease to be a developed nation within 4 years. Crisis will be worse than Great Depression. Now, large swaths of the country are already third world. It is the official UN, IMF, World Bank, International Bank of Settlements policy to turn us into a third world country. And that's stated. The bankers want to bankrupt you. They want your assets. They want you poor. They want you uneducated with your government-provided television set drooling. You know, if you don't watch a lot of TV, for years, I just quit watching television almost entirely. I would see it in a restaurant or at somebody's house and marvel at it. But trying to get back in shape on the treadmill, it's just too boring without watching TV. And so I watch the news. And, I mean, it is cartoonish. It's all lies, all spin, all disinformation. It's unspeakable. I can't believe that probably half the public watches it and believes it's real. By the way, Congress has put out another report. So have some watchdog groups. Every news station they looked at 75 across the country. That's all they had money to look at. Every news station they looked at, that's ones they looked at, had fake news. Now, by fake news, these are video packages that the local newsreader reads over to make it look like it's local, telling you it's the law to take shots. I already talked about this yesterday. It just blows me away. We have such a criminal media, such a criminal, illegal, bankrupt government that for decades, a large portion of the news, I mean, it's already propaganda, is completely fake and lies. That's why I said yesterday I was going to be interviewed by National Geographic. But you know what? I think I'm going to call them today, and I'm just not going to do it. Because I'm not going to, why go into a stack deck? Why let them try to set us up? Talk about that some too today, but look, the news is coming up. It's all very important. We're going to go through just some of the latest lawlessness of the crime gang, the armed crime gang known as government. Stay with me.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, trend forecaster, futurist, Gerald Celente joining us at T-minus 52 minutes, 45 seconds. We're also going to have Max Kaiser on the economy in the fourth hour today, and wide open phones as well at 1-800-259-9231. I have to admit, I knew that Oprah Winfrey set up a church back in 2005. I knew it was New Age, global government, merge the religion type stuff, the same thing the last two popes have been pushing. But I don't watch Oprah Winfrey. I don't watch hardly any TV. And, you know, she seems like a nice, smiley-faced person, and so I didn't really have any antagonism towards her. And as a modern, guilty white, taught that I'm evil and pathetic, I kind of have a blind spot for black folks. Because, you know, black folks are from the grassroots, the salt of the earth, but they can't be big, powerful, New World Order deceivers. Well, I did some research on her this weekend, and again, ladies and gentlemen all the time send me emails, clippings. They say, why aren't you covering this? Why aren't you covering that? Why are you covering this up? Why are you covering that up? Folks, I'm just an average person here. You know, I got to try to make breakfast for my children. Frankly, I spend probably too much time, 6, 7, 8 hours a day sometimes researching. I'm totally addicted to it. Like some cogitor, I could sit up in a tower and just read manuscripts 14 hours a day and stare out over the wasted plains of Agmar. But the point is that I can't, and I'm not aware of everything. So thank you for asking me. It was an email I got to look into it and sending me a few links, because it's just total New World Order. Total, very dangerous, very dangerous. And I don't even approach it from a Christian perspective. I approach everything from just analyzing what the New World Order attack plan is, what their program of control is. And they understand religion, man's religion, is a great way to control people. And so the United Nations and the Club of Rome and the CFR back in the 50s and 60s, all right, and we've read these reports and linked to them at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, that they were going to create a false earth worship religion centered around restricting the resources of man so that the public will laud, not fight against, living in third world enslavement. And so the third world can be suppressed from ever industrializing and threatening the Anglo-American command bases in London and New York. And it's all stated in the International Royal Commission on Population and countless other documents. And they've got their Barack Obamas, they've got their Hillary Clintons, they've got their Bill and Melinda Gates Foundations, they have their Oprah Winfreys. And just like Margaret Sanger wrote back in the 20s, and we've sent off to the universities and gotten copies of the letters. It's true. Those quotes are real about blacks being weeds that need to be exterminated. She's writing off to the big heir of Colgate, saying, I need millions more. We're recruiting prominent blacks because they can act as Judas goats to lead their fellow blacks into the eugenics operation. It's just so shameful. Now, in the case of Oprah Winfrey, I liked her because I remember her 12 years ago or whatever exposing that Mad Cow was in the U.S. But then she got in a lot of trouble for that and kind of pulled her horns in. And she may not be consciously evil, but the lady's too smart to not know what she's part of, really. Or she's a grand dupe. She is pushing the world government religion. They had a big consortium of tech company owners come out this weekend and announce a international mission for a one world religion in the name of harmony. Oh, yeah, you can have any religion you want, just don't criticize any other. And then you see that's an attack on free speech and then tyranny. So there's a major move on to do this, and later I'm going to play some clips of that and go over it. And it's always the same. I mean, you go take classes in political science and study Marxism, Leninism, socialism, Fabian socialism, and it's always the same. Utopic visions, they always have a high-tech background, they're promising no work, heavenly future. And when I really start recognizing how much of this stuff is infiltrating even the alternative media with films and radio shows and the rest of it, you will always know them, though, because they're always anti-Christian. And they'll always attack true Christians via guilt by association or straw man by pointing out all the mainline establishment phony Christians who were put up there to dress like clowns and act like clowns to discredit true Christianity. Because just from a secular position, from a sociological position, studying this, it is generally true Christians who resist tyranny, who resist slavery, who resist corruption, who don't go along. And it is really only Christians, and I have to admit, to a certain extent, Muslims, who are not fit for the New World Order. And that's why Albert Pike said Christians and Muslims would be played off against each other. He also threw in Judaism. But that's been so taken over and so changed that it's not a major threat to the New World Order. And I just see it everywhere. It's so fashionable to make fun of Christians, to attack Christians. Hey, it's Christians that started the homeschooling movement in this country that's saving some of our future brain trust. Everybody else is basically irrevocably ruined. It's the Christians that were the core group exposing the New World Order 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years ago. It was the true Christians, not the pulpit prostitutes paid off, the intellectual prostitutes, the ones paid off by FEMA. I'm already digressing. The point is that the enemy of the New World Order is true Christians. And I just have to call it like it is. Also, they don't like Muslims. And that's why the New World Order loves playing the Christian world off against the Muslim world. That's why the New World Order brings in masses of Muslims to antagonize the now secular, debilitated, disintegrating Christendom. That's why they bring in Christian armies in name into Arabia and Central Asia to antagonize them, to have a clash of civilizations, as the neocons say they are. They set us up against each other, and then the Illuminist, the old-time religion, the Babylon mystery schools, they reign supreme. Divide and conquer. And so in our name, in America's name, 3 million Iraqis are dead in the last 18 years. Half of those in the last 5.5. In our name that was done. And in the name of the Arabs, in the name of the Muslims, 9/11 was carried out. But the same people that carried out the policies that brought you Iraq, and the same people that orchestrated the hoax that is 9/11, they are one and the same. They initiated this grand struggle where systems of thought not within New World Order control, or and certainly they've controlled those religions in the past to a great extent and used them. But now there's no room for those. It's now time for those to go bye-bye. And if you don't accept the one world Gaia religion, whose central rule is humans are bad and Gaia needs blood. By the way, that's in the 96 biological diversity assessment. That's in the 97 biological diversity assessment, passed as policy and law by the UN. It says We need to reenact human sacrifice through war and ritual killing. Do not roll your eyes. Go read it. It's in my film, Road to Tyranny, blow-ups of the actual UN documents. You can take the header off of them, go to the UN's own website, and read it for yourself instead of living in denial. Yeah, I know that sounds crazy, but I'm not the one that made it law internationally. That their policy is to bring back mass murder. That is a sacrifice, ladies and gentlemen. The 3 million Iraqis were sacrificed to their god, Lucifer. Now, I'm going to explain to you something. If I talk about the Zoroasters in Iran today, or I talk about animist in Central Africa, it doesn't mean I believe in the Zoroasters or the animist, or if I go study some Inuit religion, it doesn't mean I believe in what the Eskimos believe. So you atheists can't ignore this and just throw it out. I'm scientifically pointing out to you that the UN says they're setting up a one-world religion of anti-humanism. See, everything with them is a twist within a twist. They claim they're humanist. They're about expanding and empowering humanity. It's the opposite. They are anti-human. Genetically poisoning us, altering our DNA. This mercury alters the DNA generationally. Attacking us with sodium fluoride. Spraying our food with poisons. All by design to dumb you down. Play God. Greedily. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back after this break and get into all the news, as I promised. I got sidetracked. It's just to know what I know, to know I'm right, to know it's all documented, to know. How can I go on like nothing's happened? How can I not beg and cry out to warn you?
Quite some time I've been sitting it out.
Question for the listeners out there, every man, woman, and child, old, young, black, white. 5 weeks ago, we told you here on this radio show, in finest detail, told you 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, a year ago, but you can tune back into those archives at Infowars.com and hear us lay out exactly what happened. And a lot of you out there have been on the fence about this show and our information should ask yourselves, well, if this guy is just making stuff up, how come he can predict everything? Folks, I'm not predicting anything. Your enemy, my enemy, the New World Order Crime Syndicate, they are openly stating what they're going to do, and it's not pretty. Now, the big issue here is, I want you to really think about this. I want this to sink in. I'm asking you to think about this. And then go to the PrisonPlanet.com forum and post in there your answer. Or to call into the radio show and tell me specifically. The bankers, again, not your Main Street bank, not your local bank, the four big U.S. banks that are tied in to the other six international banks. There's no more than 10 big ones. They've got some subsidiaries. Why are they publicly stealing $5 trillion in just 5 weeks? That's about $1 trillion a week. They knew it would come out. Why did Kashkari just smile and glare and say he respected them, but look at them with contempt? And his body language was, I'm a frat punk. I'm rubbing it in. You see, it's a big joke to them. Why? I mean, it's now out in mainstream news. They're stealing the money. and that they're keeping it and that they don't care. And that they lied and that it was never for subprime mortgages. Because subprime mortgages weren't the problem, folks. They just needed a psychological trigger for the history books to say, oh, it was the subprime mortgages. Greedy, dumb Americans went and got mortgages they couldn't afford. Of course, the media and the government told them to do it, and the president, Clinton, and Bush came out and said, you need to get these. This is your dream. These are offered. This is the American thing to do. Oh, the poor folks were even hesitant to do it. But they were told, do it. They were told, hey, you've been blue-collar your whole life, but home ownership's the American dream. Don't be shy. Don't keep renting and getting ripped off. Go in there and buy it. See, they psychologically need to say it was our fault. It had nothing to do with it. Nothing to even do with it. So, of course, they're not spending the money on that. That money's to buy up the stock market and buy up other banks, and they now admit that. They're leveraging that money in the market into derivatives again. You know what you can do with $5 trillion? That's what Congressman Issa said. He said, what would it take to corner, to leverage with the multiple? They're all using code words up there, but we know what that means, that the fractional reserve multiple. What would it take to corner the $55 trillion asset of U.S. banking, which is really multinational, global? It's not geopolitical. It's not centered around the U.S. It's worldwide. And he said, $5 trillion. See, $5 trillion. That $5 trillion. And see, Issa was saying to him, hey, I'm not bringing this out. I'm talking in code to you. You better back off, pal. We know what you did. And that was the one time Kashkari squirmed a bit. I know you're an intelligent audience. I hope I'm not speaking above you out there. Some of you are new listeners. It sounds like we're speaking Martian here. I understand. This is the real world we're discussing. Not football, not acting cool, not dressing studly, or getting collagen injections in your lips. The real world. Why did they do this knowing that everybody's going to find out? Well, it's a big answer. It's got a lot of answers, but it's all in the same direction. They just don't care. And that brings you to the next question. Why don't they care? Why are they stealing us blind right in front of us? Because they don't respect us, and they shouldn't respect us. We're a nation of wicked. Operating as world government. They met this weekend and agreed to openly start regulating nations at the international level, that private banks will be paid carbon taxes, basically everything they've already written in white papers and been pushing for decades. And the private banks will continue to implode the real economy so they can suck it up. They are continuing to consolidate the economy. What does a mosquito do? It injects the saliva into its prey to liquefy the cells and blood. That was the injection of fiat currency and liquidity into the market. That melts it down. Then it sucks it right back up. These are predators. It's why they're in control. It's why they own the planet. Because they're ruthless and they don't care. It is a guild of sociopaths and psychopaths who see us as weak, those of us that care about our fellow humans, those of us that have the proper programming, who are in our natural state, who understand what affects others ends up affecting us. But it's an ingrained instinct. And I know I talk about this a lot, but it really hit me this weekend. It really hit me last night and this morning. It hit me hard. 3 million dead Iraqis, 18 years of siege, all based on premeditated lies. And Madeleine Albright can get up on TV and say, yeah, I'm glad they're dead. It was a good thing to do. Good price to pay. 700,000 of them children at that time. It was 1.5 million dead, half of them children. See, they don't care. They're proud of it. Now, I want to explain something to all of you that work for the system or have been in denial. You understand the elite running things don't care about Iraqis. They don't care about Serbs. They don't care about Georgians or South Ossetians. They don't care about Africans. They don't care about anybody. You understand that? They don't care about you. And they now know that they've got you in the grip of their propaganda, that you're confused, you don't know what's going on, and they're making their move on you. They're openly stealing $5 trillion. That's basically the GDP of the entire country in a year. You understand, ladies and gentlemen? They're doing it in front of you, and they're leveraging the money to wage war against the stock market and wage war against Main Street and the real economy to consolidate it. That's what they do. They're corporate raiders. The New World Order is an offshore consortium, an alliance of private corporations that combine forces in combines to wage war against sovereign nations and take them over in corporate takeovers. They then implode the economies so they can vertically integrate the society. A nice word for putting you out on your hind end. And then with the other hand, they then offer government jobs and government control, which further domesticates us. I was watching PBS yesterday. They had a show called Fuel. I talked about this on last night's show. And they had a panel of more than 10 people. One of them was Robert Kennedy, Jr. And he said on there exactly what Obama's been saying. And some of the other hosts, some of the other commentators were saying that if you lose your job, the government needs to hire you for an environmentalist job, an environmental enforcer job. It's on the Obama website. It's his chief of staff writes a book about it. Obama gives speeches. And what do the Obamanoids do? They deny it and say we're lying. It doesn't exist. All right, let me get into the news here and then your calls. Major international drill based at DM to focus on rescue skills coordination. This is out of the Arizona Daily Star, and it says foreign troops will be working with local police, everybody, and the U.S. military in secret missions around the state. Now, remember, when NORTHCOM announced a few months ago that they were going to put first one, then two, then three, then four, now they're announcing new brigades every week, of battle-hardened troops domestically operating, quote, to deal with the American people. Remember that. This is all on record. This isn't some rumor. There's still people on my website denying it, going, it's made up, it's not happening. Probably paid shills. You know, I'd like to believe that and just think they're paid shills. No, they're people who are so invested in the lie, even as the globalists admit what they're doing, they still can't believe it. And they said, oh, the Army's going to help deal with insurrection and rioting and civil unrest and help with car wrecks. See, that's a PR function. Oh, why is the Army here? Oh, they're here to help with car wrecks. Just normal to have regular battle troops out helping. They kill people and break things. They fight enemies. They're now deployed amongst us. They were just suppressing the Iraqis, but now they're here. And they said they'll be out with the jaws of life helping people at car wrecks. And Army helicopters will now be your Starflight. See, that's for PR. It's the same thing in this article. Just like they occupy Iraq and spend billions a year in fake news and lies, lying to them. The military is not our military now, and it's here lying to us. When they first started getting rid of Posse Comitatus, secretly in the late 80s, they would have Marines and Army dress up in police uniforms and raid people's houses and gun shops. That's all on record now. But see, now they're out in the open. So the interesting thing about this is the foreign troops. And it's on record in the deal signed 6 years ago between Canada, Mexico, and Europe to use foreign troops for, quote, civil emergencies, riots, and, of course, disasters, whether man-made or not. So, see, that's not a rumor. And then in January of this year, they signed a public deal, and Congress said, hey, we weren't included in that. NORTHCOM said, sit down and shut up. You're not involved. PDD 51. Saying they'll use Mexican and Canadian troops here in the U.S. So it's on record, foreign troops for America. And then we can give you the quotes of General McCaffrey and many others. Let me see, General McCaffrey's on record, Barry McCaffrey, and then the others are also on record at West Point saying they're going to use foreign troops in America. Remember the Mexican troops came into Texas, Louisiana, and said, oh, we're bringing you soup. The Mexican flag, you know, driving in, the announcements, they're all conditioning you. Troops donned in combat. Troops down in combat, few sights are sweeter than the approach of military rescuers. See how they pose it? They're coming to help get you out of your car wreck. In a few weeks, Tucson will be the center of efforts to speed up that life-saving process. Personnel from around the globe will converge at Davis Mountain Air Force Base from December 1st to December 12th for the largest rescue exercise of its kind. The effort, dubbed Angel Thunder, will involve U.S. Army and Air Force, troops from Germany, Chile, Colombia. So they're using troops from Central and South America in Iraq. It's the death squads. From Chile, Colombia, and observers from Canada, Mexico, Brazil, and Pakistan. Several non-military U.S. agencies, such as the State and Justice Departments, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, that's the satellite spying on us, and the National Reconnaissance Office, same thing, also will take part in the drills, which aim to smooth interaction between military branches, allied nations, and civilian agencies. That's right. Local police are going to be involved. That's why it's for here in the U.S. Of course, it has dual uses overseas, but then they go on and say, oh, it's only for overseas, but the state police will be involved. This is so sick. This is unbelievable. So just more brainwashing, more conditioning. So the next time you hear about foreign troops, yeah, the Mexicans bring soup. Yeah, we got Norwegian AWACS and F-16s over us. Yeah, there's all these German bases. Yeah, there's all these Czech Republic bases. Yeah, they were doing Mexican police drills with our military at Fort Hood. Oh, yeah, Fort Benning, Georgia. Yeah, they're all over. Yeah, the Army's out running checkpoints now, but they're just helping the state police. Yeah. It's all conditioning. By the way, speaking of government deception and government bankruptcy, last week, the Dallas Morning News, the AP, and others reported tens of thousands in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, the way they minimize that is the new articles this week are saying, you know, they'll talk about per school and say, well, and then, you know, in this school, there was 140-something people. But total, it's in the thousands in the state of Texas. But they'll focus in on this school district. You know, 149 in this school district, 200 in this school district, you know, to make it sound small. But at the same time, it sounds like they're reporting on it, but they're not. But it's thousands. And it turns out for a decade or more, they just issue other people's Social Security numbers. The government just pulls up Social Security numbers. The state of Texas does, and these school districts do. And they just give the... And then these people go... These illegal aliens that are employed by the school districts to cook the food and mow the lawns and even be teacher assistants, in some cases teachers, they get to even use those Social Security numbers and they get benefits. And then the people who they've stolen them from, the government's stolen them from, just have no recourse on their credit or anything else. And so over and over again, separate agencies kept telling them to stop it, and they're just not going to stop it, and that's the way it is. And then I ran across another article today in the news. This is out of the Houston Chronicle. A system's fatal flaws. Oh, it's a fatal flaw. Kind of like when NASA just got caught faking all the temperature readings from weather services around the world, just completely faking them. Over and over again, they call it a mistake, you know, to say it's the hottest year on record when it's actually one of the coldest. It's always a mistake. You know, when a SWAT team goes to your house and kills you, it's a mistake. Thousands of inmates admit they're in the U.S. illegally, but even those convicted of violent crimes are often released right back onto Houston streets. I remember a story 3 years ago that said 400,000 violent offenders released in 1 year in Houston. Oh, yeah, Houston's about 8 million people. 6 million in the city, 2 million metro. About half illegal alien. Literally, go down there. And you know, I mean, there's cases where they'll rape or kill scores of people. You know, the railway serial killer, all these people. And it's not, it's every criminal in Mexico knows this is the happy hunting ground. You come here, use any name you want, get consular matriculas from the Mexican embassy in any name you want. The cops release you, the gringo cops, they release you. I mean, it's on record that they're told, cops are told, we're just going to release them if you arrest them. Don't arrest them. So they, illegal aliens have wrecks, drunk, no license, no nothing. Nothing happens. Citizens are arrested because we are the slugs. We are the Capri Sun, you know, to have the straw stuck in us, the fruit drink, the juicy juice. And they just, a dumb coward slave trained to be fed on. Oh, but an illegal alien, they're there to drive down wages, break down the society, make sure Mexico never has a real revolution. The U.S. is a steam valve. Get everybody fighting with each other. Federal immigration officials allowed scores of violent criminals, some ordered deported decades ago, to walk away from Harris County jails despite the inmates' admission to local authorities that they were in the country illegally, a Houston Chronicle investigation found. A review of thousands of criminal and immigration records shows that immigration and customs enforcement officers didn't file the paperwork to detain roughly 75% of more than 3,500, this is a total whitewash, folks, inmates who told jailers during the booking process that they were in the U.S. illegally. Again, this is a government that isn't a government. The laws are for us. Let me explain something. I've got the news reports. Audits this year are already up more than 100% of citizens. And the IRS, when they need money, they just come in and say, well, we don't care if you paid us what you were supposed to. We're going to go ahead and assess you a bunch of fines and fees. We got to give it to the foreign banks. We got to give it for welfare for the illegal aliens. We got to have it. And so they are taking houses, squeezing homes, seizing bank accounts. See, you're not just going to have your dollar devalued or have your country bankrupt. You're going to be squeezed around the neck. And if you're caught drinking one beer coming home, you're going to jail. You're caught not having your insurance up to date one day, you're going to jail. You're getting a ticket. You're caught without a driver's license, you're going to get, they're taking people to jail for not wearing seatbelts now. You will have the book thrown at you because you've got money and honey, you're going to be sucked dry. Folks, I have countless articles today with government just doing whatever it wants, whenever it wants. And why shouldn't they? It isn't government. It's a private holding company. Government acts as the nozzle on a vacuum cleaner, sucking up everything. And it's growing like cancer. Government tripled in the last 8 years, and Obama's probably going to triple it again. Everything else is going to implode, and all we are going to be is a giant third world country with a bunch of people running around in black uniforms and environmental outfits telling us what to do and regulating us and micromanaging us, and they're not going to lower your property taxes. In fact, they're already announcing all over the country they're just going to start assessing fees on homeowners. They're not even calling it property tax. Just, oh, well, there's a new fee because we need more roads or a water treatment plant. They hand the water treatment plants, the power plants over to private interest. They triple your prices overnight. And as the economy gets worse and worse, these people in uniform, they aren't going to say they were wrong. They aren't going to back off. They want their money. They like their power trip. They're going to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze and squeeze because they're now in a pathology of they're the good guys, we're the bad guys. And no amount of corruption, no amount of double standards, no amount of lawlessness by them matters. All right. Charles, Steve, Tyler, Mike, Stephanie, your calls are coming up. We got a big guest as well today. A couple big guests, but... Oh, there's so much news here, ladies and gentlemen. It's just all incredible. But we'll cover it all. Infowars.net, PrisonPlanet.tv, JonesReport.com, TruthNews.us.
He's going the distance.
You see, a lot of people go, what's the big deal with police checkpoints? What's the big deal with black uniforms and cameras? So what? I've done nothing wrong. Oh, no, that's not what it's about. The surveillance, the secret arrest, the prisons. It's about stealing from the middle class. See, tyranny is about suppressing you while they rob you. They always have nice excuses for it. See, that's why tyranny isn't fun. See, Americans have seen Hollywood kind of make it look glamorous. Well, you're going to find out how glamorous it is. Get ready. They're going to squeeze you till your eyes pop out. And by the way, they're not going to audit government workers. They're not going to audit their own people. Just like in California, 994,000 people can't get tickets, can't be arrested basically for anything other than like murders. Because the computers, cameras aren't even allowed to scan their license plates. They're above the law. They are the gods of our earth now. They are the tyranny. They are the tyrants. Charles in California, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, man. Rough times. I'm basically wondering, in the event of 2 points and questions, I guess, but in the event of, let's say, World War III comes, right? And which everything's pointing to that. What few countries, I mean, you're big, you've got a lot of information coming to you, a lot of informed people. So my question to you is, as a backup plan, say FEMA doesn't take over all the airports yet, and I do want to leave this country, what 3-4 countries do you know of that, I mean, you know, there's no silver bullet, obviously, but what few countries would be the best to maybe look at?
The New World Order is everywhere.
We know this.
They are. I mean, listen, they're announcing now, if you're going to fly to England or England's going to fly from England, you have to register with Homeland Security 3 days before. See, no longer do you fill out a customs card. They decide. So now you see there's no leave, there's no come-in list, but the illegal aliens can commit violent felonies and are released. It's about us, the producer. You understand? We are literally what's for dinner. We're the suckling pigs they roast and put on the table. And the whole grid's going into place worldwide. Listen, World War III is already here. It's economic against the people. And the war on terror is the war on the people. It's the physical end, then the phony environmental banking collapse, and environmental regulation is the other side of the pincer attack.
I agree with everything you're saying, but you did mention yesterday how, you know, if you weren't selfish and you, I mean, if you were selfish and you weren't, you know, doing what you're doing, that you would leave this country. So what I'm asking you is, which country would that be? Which few countries were you looking at or would look at?
Well, I would only leave. I would only leave because I'm high up on the list for somebody they'd grab. By the way, go ahead and get Salente on. Go ahead and call him. See, it's different for every person. I'm saying because I'm so high up in the food chain in the fight that I'm a major target if they really go into a hot war against the people. I mean, it's low-intensity attacks on us right now, and they're slowly turning the heat up with the ambient background silent weapon system, you know, where the neighbor gets grabbed, or the neighbor's kid gets grabbed, or the neighbor dies of cancer at 25, or the neighbor gets Alzheimer's at 30. You know, there's soft kills all around us, but they've got to slowly turn the heat up so their own zombie minions don't notice what they're part of. See, they're under mind control. They've been incrementally brought into this. I mean, as bad as it is, rural areas, of Mexico, Costa Rica. I know a lot of big money is going to the Cook Islands. You know, I mean, it all depends how much money you've got. A lot of people have private fortresses in the Bahamas. A lot of big money goes to Switzerland, Spain, Portugal. I mean, if you're somebody who isn't high up on the hip, see, here's the problem. They changed the rules 2 years ago where we can't even get our money out. See, they got all their money out. Now they won't let anybody with even a little bit of money get out.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, already into hour number two, we have stock market analyst, international television host Max Keiser joining us coming up in about an hour and a half. We're going to have open phones in this hour for our guest. And he can talk about any issues, so the folks on hold, you can talk to him as well. He's Gerald Celente. We're really honored to have him with us. We wrote a story at PrisonPlanet.com last week titled, Celente Predicts Revolution, Food Riots, Tax Rebellions by 2012. He goes on international television, national television, Fox, CNN, you name it. He is one of the, if not the most accurate, because I've been following him for more than a decade, people predicting trends. They call him a trend forecaster. I would call him a futurist, but just seeing where things are going. And he makes a lot of the similar predictions we make, but I tend to just read UN think tank documents, Rand Corporation, where they say what they're going to do. He said, there will be a revolution in this country, and it's not going to come yet, but it's going to come down the line, and we're going to see a third party, and that's the catalyst for it. The takeover of Washington, D.C. in broad daylight by Wall Street in a bloodless coup. And then he goes into talking about basically riots and homelessness and complete breakdown of society. And so joining us for the next hour is Gerald Celente to talk about a host of issues and get where he thinks we're going in the future. And, of course, you can also link through and go to his website, trendsresearch.com. Gerald Celente, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Alex, thank you for having me.
You bet. We got 3 minutes before we break, but just lay out in the first 3 minutes a little bit about yourself and what trend research is.
Well, current events form future trends. So we look at the major social, economic, political, geopolitical, environmental, consumer. We look at over 300 different categories on a daily basis worldwide, looking for those major trends that are shaping the future. For example, the current event today that everyone should know about is that what Citigroup announced, they're firing 50,000 people. I mean, and they're not going to make those jobs up in the Circuit City of Starbucks. So we look at this data and we analyze it, but we do so as political atheists. Both of these parties, you know, we have nothing to do with them. And so we look at events for what they are and not the way we want them to be. And that's what really stops a lot of people from seeing the future. The other thing is when you look at economic forecasts, political forecasts, they do it one-dimensionally. They don't look at all the other interlocking fields.
Yes.
So that's what we do differently than most others. The system that we have, we call globalnomic. It means including the entire world from the word globus and mnemine to manage, because trends can be managed. You can see what's happening and then take the measures necessary to protect yourself or to profit from what the future may bring.
Absolutely. When we come back, I want to get into the fact that the NSA uses its snooping system, not so much to even, quote, spy on the individual, but to see major trends and try to get ahead of it, to control it, and to give that info to select intergroup corporations. The government, the big corporations, they know what you and I know, Gerald, and what you're so good at. They just don't like advertising real systems to the public.
Well, yes and no, because we've worked with a number of the major corporations, and you know that's our business. And I have to tell you, there are corporations like Ford, for example. They came to visit us in the 90s, and they, you know, we thought we were talking to dead people, and we said, you know, why waste our time working with these people when we know that what we give them is not going to be implemented? So So, you know, we assume that they know, but from our experience, Alex, most of them are well behind the curve. Examples, you know, look at the major corporations today and how they're suffering at so many different levels.
We're going to talk about that when we get back, and we're going to discuss the key, what you just said. People look at the world the way they want to see it. Ladies and gentlemen, that is delusion. That is a fraud. Don't you want to really know how the world works? Don't you really want to count instead of having your thoughts fed to you? Gerald Celente is our guest. We'll be right back after this quick break.
The Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
There's not a better trend forecaster than Gerald Celente. The man knows what he's talking about, CNBC. Gerald Celente has a knack for getting the zeitgeist right. USA Today, Economist magazine, wrote that he has a network of 25 experts whose range of specialties would rival many university faculties. When CNN wants to know about top trends, we ask Gerald Celente. It goes on and on. And Gerald, I want to get into how you integrate all these different sectors of the economy, the society, how you come up with your trends that have turned out to be so accurate. But before we do that, perhaps we should get the listeners who don't know who you are to learn a little bit about Gerald Celente, how you got into this particular field and became a leader in it, or the leader in it. And, you know, basically some of the predictions that you've made that have been so accurate, and where you see us going, you know, fleshing out the discussions that you've had about basically complete breakdown of society and martial law type scenarios.
Well, the way I began my career, after graduate school, I managed the mayoral campaign for the fellow running for office in Yonkers, New York, and it was 1971. And from there, they sent me up to Albany. I did such a great job, and I was the assistant to the secretary of the New York State Senate, which, by the way, was the worst job I ever had. You know, it's a disgusting spectacle to see grown men grovel, particularly from a kid that was grown up in the Bronx. And, you know, you'd watch all these people. I'd be talking to a buddy, you know, we'd be in the chambers, in the Senate chambers, and a senator would walk in. My buddy would leave me to go help the senator sit down, you know, pull his chair out, you know. So when my friend would come back, I'd say, "What's the matter? You know, the guy can't sit down on his own. He needs some help." So that was I got to see the insides of government. From there, I went to St. John's University, and I taught probably one of the nation's first courses in American politics and campaign technology in 1972. From there, I went to Chicago, and I was a government affairs specialist working for segments of the chemical industry and other parts of the industry, and between Washington and Chicago. As a matter of fact, I was in D.C. When the first energy crisis hit in 1973. Jimmy Carter later becomes president, and the Iranian conflict breaks out. And I had been following this thing for years, Alex. You know, I knew how the CIA overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran and Mossadegh and on, and how the SAVAK, the secret police of the Shah, was only second to the SS. You know, it was a brutal regime. When the revolution started to happen in Iran, I knew it was real, because I knew of the pent-up hatred that they had against this guy. Jimmy Carter goes to spend New Year's Eve with the Shah and his wife, and he and Rosalind. And in those days, when the president came back from overseas, it was a big deal. He walks up to the microphones after saluting out and walking out of the helicopter on the White House lawn. And Jimmy Carter announced to the American people that the Shah was the island of stability in the Middle East. At that moment, I became a political atheist. I'd been around long enough, I knew the game. And then the second thing that hit me was, what will be the implications of what's going on? And I realized that gold and oil prices would increase. So I started to speculate in both those fields. And I was only a kid. I was in my early 30s, you know. And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I did know enough that I knew that the American public was getting one story, and then it was a whole other story on the international scene. I made enough money from that where I quit my job and that's when I began the Trends Research Institute in 1980, always under the understanding that current events form future trends, but if I look at them, as you said going into the break, without looking at them the way I want them to be, the way I wish them or hope them to be, and just the way they are, and let the data speak for itself, then you can see a clear direction of where the future is heading. And you know, it's like going to a doctor. You get a diagnosis. You don't call the doctor an SOB if you don't like his economic or political diagnosis. You accept it for what it is and work from that parameter. And that's what we do. We see the trends, the way they're laying out in front of us, where they're going to go, and then we work around that direction, not trying to redirect it in our minds so that we hope for something different.
Well, now specifically, because we have limited time, Wendy, I can talk to you for 10 hours. You've got so much information. Briefly, I know you don't like to brag, but no brag, just fact, as John Wayne would say. Break down some of the predictions and trends, the projections that you've made that have unfortunately come true. And I say unfortunately because your analysis is pretty much identical to mine and many other experts I'm interviewing about, on the good side, total depression, breakdown of society, police state. On the bad side, road warrior, Mad Max, 10,000 BC, just lawless third world bands of... that's what you're talking about now, and that's where all the trends are headed, and government is doing everything it can to accentuate that. So let's break down some of your track record and then get into what's happening currently and then into the future, sir.
Yeah, well, I guess my first big forecast came in 1980. Actually, it was January of 1987, and I had predicted that there'd be a stock market crash that year, and the Wall Street Journal gave me credit for that one as well. From there, the next big one was with, I had in my book Trend Tracking, as a matter of fact, I came out and said that there would be a new third party. This was in 1988, and for some reason I said that Ross Perot would be the type of candidate that would kind of head this kind of party, and in those days nobody knew who Ross Perot was. From there, my other big forecast in the consumer end had to do with gourmet coffees, the organic foods, water in the early 80s, a big water trend, bottled water, a whole variety of natural healing trends. Matter of fact, one of the early books I worked on in 1986 was called Natural Healing. So I got a very good understanding of that field as well. And again, this is what really differentiates me from a lot of the other trend forecasters, in that I get involved in a lot of the fields where I see things going and understand them at a different level. So those are some of the things. Then back going into the economic crisis, we had then forecast the 1990 recession, how long it would last, and the 1997 foreign currency crisis, the dot-com crash. In our Trends Journal, we said in October 1999 that by the second quarter of 2000, we would have the dot-com bubble would burst. Then the ensuing recession. And then this past November 7th, we took out the domain name panicof08.com. And we knew that there would be the panic of 08, and we also said that they were in our top trends for 2008, which came out on December 17th, 2007, we said that there would be an economic 9/11.
And now we see that unfolding. What do you see breaking down the next 3 years? How do you see it unfolding? Now, again, folks, this is general. It can go from bad to worse. Or you could say the good, the bad, and the ugly. What is the best-case scenario versus the worst-case scenario? I mean, take that question any way you want. Those are just general thoughts I have.
Well, and let me back up, too, because, we're only human here, and we don't see everything, and we don't make all the calls properly. In the 1990s, for example, we underestimated in around 1993, 1994, the impact of the computer revolution and the technology boom. Now, any of us that remember back then, you know, it was still in its infancy. And so, and they had that law, I forget which the name of the law, where things increase at an exponential rate in technology far beyond what we had ever anticipated. So that's what's got us out of the 1990s recession, because we should have been in the shape we are in now back then had it not been for that technological boom. Now,
I understand for time we're oversimplifying, but also they changed the banking rules in 93, 95, 99 to allow intensified fractional reserve banking and leveraging. So that also helped the bubble along.
That helped the bubble along, and that created the big bubble that burst that we're in now, as you well know.
Yeah.
So, but just to give you the scenarios, yeah, we're saying we're going to go into a depression worse than the Great Depression, and here's why. And then I'm going to tell you why it cannot happen, or it may not happen.
Yeah, I mean, there is a way to get out of this.
Is a way to get out of it, but not through fiscal and monetary stimulus. If we have an alternative energy breakthrough beyond solar, wind, geothermal, biofuel that they like to talk about, whether it's something in coal fusion, zero-point energy, charge clusters, permanent magnets, hydrino power, something like that that's a productive enhancement that's as big as the discovery of fire or the invention of the wheel, then we get out of this economic mess.
A whole new market, a paradigm-shifting development. You're saying minus that, we're in deep trouble.
Minus that, we're going to go into the greatest depression, and here's why. Back when we had the last depression, most people didn't own homes. They didn't have all this burden that they're carrying now with taxes and everything else, insurance. Back then, people didn't have home equity loans. Matter of fact, you know, we're probably both old enough to know when people had something called second mortgages, they were called losers. Back then, people didn't have credit cards. They weren't over $14 trillion in debt. Back then, the government had a trade surplus. We were not $700 billion in the hole each
year. And the people were self-sufficient.
And the people were self-sufficient. Back then, the government was not spending, 11.5 trillion and growing in the hole with a budget deficit. Back then, we had budget surpluses.
Oh.
Back then, we weren't costing us over $2 trillion to fight wars. Back then, we had a manufacturing base that when the Depression finally did end with the onset of World War II, we were able to manufacture ourselves out of it and then later on the rest of the world.
Gerald, stay there. Gerald Celente, trendsresearch.com, is our guest. Stay with us. This is powerful info. One of the top trend forecasters in the world. And he is our guest for the next 40 minutes or so. We're going to be opening the phones up coming up later in the hour at 1-800-259-9231. I know we had callers holding over from earlier, but it's all on the same subject, what's happening to our world, our society. So please address your questions to our guest or get off the line. Going back to Gerald Celente. Gerald, you were going over why we're in such a much more precarious and weak and debilitated position than the people that went through the 10 years of the Great Depression, and then forecasting where we're going in the future. Please continue.
Yeah, the other thing, too, by the way, the one that you pointed out as well is very, very important. The people are more self-sufficient than they are now. You know, this is it's like a baby state in so many ways. And, you know, people looking for help from the government, my God, you know. I mean, Katrina quality rescue skills, what are they looking at? So the other things, too, is back then people didn't have 401ks and IRAs that were their future evaporating right before them. And it was, and the other thing that people need to know was during the Depression, you know, we didn't have the, you know, you can do some of these work project things that they talk about. You know, we didn't have these deficits that we have now. So to keep talking about stimulus packages, to keep talking about work project packages, where is this money going to come from? And again, as every historian or economist knows, the only thing that got us out of that depression was World War II. So having said that, we are looking now in the short term. Here's the scenario that we see unfolding. Before we get to the riots and the tax revolts and the increasing crime, which is already beginning to happen.
Oh, yeah.
What we're going to see is after we think the real breakdown is going to begin in February. That's our forecast. Because in February, we're going to now realize the shock of what has happened from a disappointing is putting it lightly, Christmas holiday retail season.
And you think the Obama hope will fade by then as well?
Yes, for a lot of people. It's going to fade for the people that have lost everything. For example, as I said, Citicorp today announced they're laying off, 50,000 people. You go to all of these places around the country, like the Carolinas, we had Wachovia and all these banking centers, financial centers, people living in their McMansions and having these huge, huge mortgages. I mean, they're going to become McBoarding houses as they try to get people in there so they can pay the rent and pay the taxes and pay the utilities. So we're going to see people out on the streets. You know these things called self-storage units? They're going to take on the true meaning. Cells are going to be storing themselves in there because they're not going to be, you know, it's better than living in a tent as these tent cities are sprouting up all over the country, or sleeping out in the streets, or sleeping in a homeless shelter. So we think it's going to be February because the real data is going to come in to show how really bad this is. Having said that, there's still going to be the element of hope that Obama is going to be able to do something, and being that they're painting him as an FDR and cloaking him in that mantle, get ready for a bank holiday, because we're going to see runs on the banks that are going to come. That they're not going to be able to cover them anymore. And so, and I love the terminology, Alex, that they use. You know, holiday. You know, they make it sound so beautiful. That means you're not going to get your money out of the bank. And they're going to say, don't worry, it's FDIC insured, but you just can't get it out all at once. So we are also in that camp, by the way, that we are going to see, even though it doesn't look like it now because of a variety of manipulations going on, we believe that gold is going to go into the 2000 range, and we're going to see periods of deflation whereby all those homes out there are going to be worth a lot less than they are now. And there's a glut of product everywhere, deflationary prices on one end and hyperinflation on the other. As I mentioned with February, because once all these retail outlets start closing, as we're already seeing with Circuit City, with Starbucks, it's going to be a glut of commercial real estate, and that's the next shoe to fall.
All right, long segment coming up. I want to break down that over the next few years, what he thinks government's response will be to this, why he thinks it will push the people into open rebellion. Our guest is Gerald Celente. I'm Alex Jones. Our website's InfoWars.com. I was just talking to Gerald Celente during the break. He didn't tell me not to say this, but he'll probably get a seat in the FEMA camp for it. Probably already will, but I didn't know he was aware of our work and said it was, interesting. And that, let's just get from Gerald Celente, because I'm interested. I really respect him, what he thinks of the work we're doing here from the work of mine that he's seen. Mr. Celente?
Yes, no, I have been following you for years, and I admire you as a man of courage. And in these times, not many people have it anymore. and they're always towing the party line or afraid of the implications of what they say. And you've been a man that speaks out, you speak your mind, and you're a man of your word and your conviction. So, you know, what's not to admire?
Well, I admire you, but I mean, look, with me, it's not even courage. And I would imagine it's the same with you, because I talk to, you know, other people that'll speak out and trailblaze. I mean, why would you lie? I mean, all you've got is who you are and the truth. You know, money, power, things like that really don't matter to a well-centered person. The truth, veritas, is everything. So with me, it's not even courage. In a way, it's the opposite of courage. I have been so freaked out by what I saw coming historically, because we repeat the same activities over and over again, that it's actually been out of fear that I've been trying to change things and trying to warn people. And, you know, also, quote, brotherly love. I mean, I don't like seeing people be conned. I don't like seeing my fellow, you know, humans being hurt. I mean, why do you do what you do, Gerald? Because obviously, you know, you put yourself at risk doing some of the things you do.
Oh, yeah. No, listen, you know, it's funny when we talked to Ed, when we talked about, you know, the failings of the Bush administration, we were called Bush bashers. Now we're being called Obama bashers, you know. But, you know, it's the price that you pay. And you said it. What's more than your word? I mean, for me, my belief is that when I take that last breath, I want to know that I was true to myself. There's a great saying, you know, that whether it's the Quran, the Bible, Jesus, Muhammad, or Buddha, there is no salvation for the hypocrite. So, you know, what's the sense of living if you're going to be a hypocrite? But, you know, as but it really is a time for people, you know, as they say, you know, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their country. And this is that time, and we've never seen it more than this, because there is going to be that that period following. When the crime rates start going up, the first reaction is going to be send more police out into the streets. And so they're going to build up more and more of this. Again, you can call what's going on now with the government now controlling the world's largest insurance company, the world's largest mortgage brokerage. And now they're talking about taking over one of the largest auto companies. And of course, now they're buying into the banks. You could call this either socialism, communism, or fascism, but you cannot call it free enterprise or democracy.
That's right. It's total command and control. The break interrupted you. You were continuing to go through how you see this unfolding and just how bad it's going to get.
So what we're looking at, then, is they're going to call a bank holiday, we believe. And we also believe that they're going to try the same thing that FDR did with confiscating gold. That'll be another thing, because we're already hearing from the G20 members to reinstitute some format of the Brented Woods Agreement, which, of course, gold was the standard. But of course, there's too much money out there, so that means gold would probably be $6,000 or $60,000 an ounce. It would have a really, really high value. So we think that there's going to be that kind of confiscation. We think also that they're going to... They're doing it already. They're squeezing the little people, and this is why there's going to be a revolt. You look at, go around the country, Alex, state after state, city after city, locality after locality. They're raising taxes to make up for lost revenues. How are the people going to pay these things when their median household income is well below 1999 levels? Wages are falling behind. How are they losing their jobs? That's number one. Here in New York, you know what they're doing in the city is they just hired several hundred new traffic enforcement officers, so that when you're driving in New York City and if your car goes into that white space between the lines where the pedestrian walks, you get a ticket.
Yeah, what they're doing is white gloving everyone now. Everywhere I drive in Austin, there's a cop every half mile. Now if you go a couple miles over the speed limit, they give you a ticket. Everything's being watched, but then they admit in major Texas papers that illegal aliens are above the law. They don't have to have any driver's license, insurance, nothing, only the citizens. And then meanwhile, traffic enforcement cops in New York have gotten in trouble because they drive the worst. They park wherever they want. They do whatever they want. I mean, they're just going to keep squeezing and squeezing, and now not just property taxes. They're saying, we're just going to assess you $20,000, everybody in the town, for new roads we're putting in. I mean, government just is going crazy. What's going to happen?
Well, this is why the revolt is going to take place. You know, there's another one, too. They've unleashed all of the people, from the sales tax people, you know, going to all the small shops, the pizza shops, you know, the liquor stores, all the small people, and they're cracking down on them, making them pay more sales tax. IRS is going to go after more of the small people because they're too big to fail, they're too big to control, and too big to monitor. So this is where the revolution starts taking place, because when you're hungry and when you're out of a job and when you're out on the streets, you don't want to hear "yes, we can" anymore. And that's what's going to happen. And the other thing that's going to happen as well is we believe that there's going to be a new third party formed around the same reasons the third parties were formed in the 19th century, against the central bankers taking over the country. And if anybody's not old enough to see what's happening or too blind to look, they better wake up. As we said in our trend alert recently, it was a D.C. heist. They hijacked Washington. And you have Henry Paulson in there from Goldman Sachs. I love it. You know, the liberals, you know, they bash Bush and Cheney. Oh, you know that Cheney has ties to Halliburton. Yeah, how about, you know, who did Obama bring in as his new team, his transition team in there for the economy? Robert Rubin and Larry Summers.
They're the guys, you know, that changed the rules to do all of this.
Exactly. They're the ones that put the nail in the Glass-Steagall Act that allowed the banksters to be running wild as they are now, and also to put all these phony little gambling games like derivatives.
Well, here's the $64 million question then. Why did Kashkari even go up before the House and basically admit they took the $5 trillion, not $700 billion? They're not telling anybody where it went. And then he started laughing at them. I mean, I've never even in modern history, or even in Rome, with Caligula, you know, marrying his horse, seen this type of craziness where it's like they're wanting to push us into rebellion.
And exactly. And this is the same thing. I mean, the same thing happened in France, you know. It's they are living in a world that is, you think, and I was on MSNBC one time and recently, you know, during the elections, and Mitt Romney was still in the race, and he came out with his, you know, shining city on the hill kind of thing, trying to mimic Reagan, and the host said to me, well, you know, isn't Governor Romney correct what he's saying? You know, shouldn't we be more hopeful? You know, this was, you know, last year, and I said, this year actually, but early in the year, and I said, you know, I said, this guy doesn't go to the gas station and pump his own gas. He doesn't go shopping and Stop and Shop and watch the prices or cut coupons. They don't have a clue what's going on. And that's what's going on over here. Let them eat cake.
Well, studying history, studying trends, how bad is it going to get? And we were progressing there. We'd gotten up to February, moving forward. Break down what you see happening.
So we think the first cracks are going to become very evident in February. When the cold winter sets in, people are going to feel the hardship. From then on, it's going to go downhill from there. We're going to see the real estate market's going to bust out completely. And again, the next big shoe to fall, here they come, is going to be the commercial real estate sector. And this is what we wrote in the Trends Journal last year before this all happened. We said the subprime problem was merely the cracks at the bottom of the foundation. Matter of fact, you could see that on a clip that I did in December of 2007. But we said, you know, this stuff about the subprime. Wait till all these hedge funds. And how about these leveraged buyout firms like Sabiris and Carlyle Group and Blackstone that were buying up multi-billion-dollar companies with no money down? How about all these real estate developers?
And credit default swaps and credit cards and just everything.
Exactly. So now you look at the commercial sector, as I said, you're seeing now after the retail hit comes, you're going to start seeing ghost malls. Who's going to occupy these things? But here's the positive end, and I want to make this very clear. As the giants fall, they're going to leave big gaps left behind. And that's for the entrepreneurs to move into these slots. You see, what's happening, Alex, is this is, by the way, more than just the collapse of the markets. This is the decline of Empire America. This whole corporate model is built upon growth and expansion. Let's take first the retail sector. They get their money and their stock, people to buy stock in them by the amount of new stores they're building each year, their expansion. Now they're in decline. It's not as though these are brilliant managers and increasing in-store sales. That's not happening.
You're saying we've got to switch to innovation, not just growth and expansion.
Exactly, and they don't know how to do that. As you we were talking earlier, why, you know, I get frustrated working with large corporations. The innovation's not part of their DNA, or else if they were, they wouldn't be them. You know, all they know how to do is make money. That doesn't make you smart. It makes you shrewd. You know, so there are very different things here. So this is going to be a great opportunity. Something old and ugly is dying that deserves to die. Now let's take it to the other level, agriculture. The agricultural model is built upon producing massive amounts of product and then shipping it far distances. Guess what? Can't do that anymore. This is a great time for local. Local communities, buy local. If the people want to thrive and survive in these times, they have to put their focus locally. Support everything you can locally. Don't buy a thing that you don't have to. And by the way, people ask me, you know, what should I do? I said, first thing you do is call up whatever town you're living in and tell them to shut the damn lights off that are lighting up all these municipal buildings. It costs money. You know, my father, there were seven of us. I grew up in the Bronx. And may his soul rest in peace. He used to say to us, shut the lights off. What do you think, I have a pull with Edison? Shut the lights off. Stop. I don't want to pay for this stupidity. So this is where we're going. And then we're going to start seeing the tax revolts. You can't raise taxes when people are out of work and their incomes are declining. Who do these people think they are?
Well, what you said is, earlier is happening already. Bush tripled the size of government. Obama's promising to expand it even more. And they're hiring more cops, more bureaucrats, more. And we just don't have it. What is it you don't understand?
Exactly. So then they're going to understand the same way they did with the French Revolution. We're going to have a revolution. By the way, in our future forecast, we can see the country splitting up into either regions or separate states pulling out. Because this country, you could go back to our Trends Journal. It was the fall edition 2002. The headline read, Empire America Fading Fast. We're going the way of the former Soviet Union. We're going to see this country break up. I mean, for anybody to think that these people in Washington are intelligent, more intelligent than they are, or they have the answers, you know,
Well, Mr. Salente, a lot of them are, you know, people worth billions of dollars that I know that lived in Austin that I've met personally. They have fled the country in the last 3 years, and they're, you know, inside info, and I was saying this 3 years ago, the United States, quote, won't be here economically. And that's the term you're using, is a post-industrial, a post-first world nation.
Yeah, and we call it an underdeveloping nation. And they're going to do the things that they do in other underdeveloping nations, for example, like in Argentina, when the currency busts out. You can't get your money out of the bank. And they'll do a fake flag thing, you know. They'll blame something else for the problem. I mean, I love this Obama and his speech, you know, how, you know, yes, we can. We don't count. If they were listening to the Wees don't want the General Motors bailout, and the Wees didn't want the $700 billion
bailout. Let's stop right there. You talk about a false flag, some type of staged event or group of staged events to keep the slaves rallied around the bank while they slit our throats?
You got it. You know, look, they say that I believe. Read my lips, no new taxes. I didn't have sex with that woman, Monica Lewinsky. I smoked, but I didn't inhale. I'm no crook. Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda. What am I, a kid? I'm going to believe these people?
Well, it just came out again that every TV station that Congress looked at is broadcasting fake news. They were paid to lie. And, you know, one example is every year before school, you see the same newscast on every channel, same words. And I knew it was paid for then, but now they admit it and they say it's the law to take vaccines. There There is no law. I mean, that's how bankrupt and evil and corrupt, and they aren't going to stop. Now, you know, I got so many callers I want to talk to you. This is such a hot interview. Is there any way to keep you, and if you can't, we'll just have you back up in a few weeks, for 15 minutes into the next hour?
Sure, I'll do another 15.
Okay, yeah, I mean 15 after this, so that gives us about a total of, you'll be gone at 15 after next hour, so that gives us another, you know, 30 minutes or 25 minutes or so, because I want to go to callers when we come back. But what about pension funds? You talk about Argentina, you talk about other countries. They are now saying, hey, we want to take over the pension funds, the 401ks, to, quote, keep them safe. Your take on that?
Again, you know, as I said, you could call it communist, fascist, or socialist, but you can't call it democracy or free market. They will do anything. And so, yeah, I don't put that past them.
Well, Congress just had hearings last week saying they're looking at it, taxing them, taking part of them. They're going to take your private 401k, and then the Social Security Administration is going to send you a check. I mean, what are so you're saying you really think they're delusional in government, and they just think we're going to go along with this?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, you know, look at who these people are. I love it. They're just saying, you know, now that, you know, the Democrats are in power over here, you know, now that we'll be able to get something done. I mean, who's going to get what done? Pelosi, Reid, Dodd, Frank? How about Laurel and Hardy and Abbott and Costello? What have these people have ever done? Who could get away with this stuff?
Except Steele. Why do you think?
Yeah, and make bad decisions.
What?
I mean, who could? None of us would be employed if we screwed up as much as they did. So I mean, you know, there's yesterday Obama. You know, they broadcast that thing on 60 Minutes, and you know about the economy, and he said they'll do whatever it takes. Well, what's whatever?
Well, that means nationalizing industries, stealing everything the middle class has got. Folks, they're going to point the poor, uneducated people at the middle class. They're going to rob the middle class, and they're planning on all of this. We'll talk more about it on the other side and take your phone calls with our amazing guest, Gerald Celente. His website's trendsresearch.com. Ours is Infowars.com. Okay, we're going to go to Steve, Tyler, Mike, Casey, Aaron, and others. Please have your question ready for myself or the guest, Gerald Celente, one of the top trim forecasters in the world. But, I mean, that last question, we're here marveling at this. They have, increased the police force 6-7-fold the last 15 years. They have prepared this MIT surveillance grid, the cameras, the license plate reading systems. They say they're getting ready for revolts. They're moving NORTHCOM brigades in, saying we're under military occupation. So the government at the top does know it's going to be unpopular and that the raping of the middle class is going to be unpopular, but they're going to use the poor, dumbed down, you know, who means well, middle lower class or whatever, and the blue collar folks to kind of sick them on the middle class is what I'm seeing. I see that class warfare being set up. What do you see, Gerald Celente?
They're going to try that, but it's not going to work because, you know, they're going to be very angry at all levels of society because there's not going to be any money out there. The government's going to become the common enemy. And as a matter of fact, we see the Republicans and the Democrats working together very closely, you know, to defeat the common enemy, which is going to be the common man. And that's what we see the battle shaping up in the coming years.
That's right. That's why we see such incredible integration of both parties, because they work for the very same interest.
Exactly. They both work for the Wall Street mob. You just have different divisions. You have the Goldman Sachs group over in D.C. You have the J.P. Morgan mob over in New York. You know, it's just different, you know, members of the crime family.
You've got Gambino and the Genovese. So in closing, before we go to call, sir, you know, basic trends, 2009 starts accelerating, more and more layoffs, more confidence lost. You talk about total implosion by 2012. What will it look like?
Crime is going to be rampant, and it's going to be also a time, and I really want to make this, because there's a positive end of this, because something old and ugly is dying, and something new could be born. This could be the time for a renaissance. It doesn't have to end ugly. Because one thing America has, and I travel the world, I mean, you know, people still look to America for the place of innovation. They don't know how bad it is over here. You know, they don't know how everybody's become so corporatized. But the thing is that we have, more than any other nation, the ability to turn this around and turn it into a positive. And the way it becomes a positive is if we break away from one size rules all. So if we start going back to states' rights, to local rights, and then also, Alex, necessity is the mother of invention. Great things could happen from this.
No, I agree. We're stagnant. We're decadent. We're dying. This is like getting a fever that burns out the infection. But so that's the big challenge. Do we let the globalists, the New World Order, use the crisis to sell total control, or do we do a judo move and use this attack against them to fully discredit them and have a true renaissance?
Precisely. And that's, by the way, the foundation of the work at the Trends Research Institute. We provide the trends. We provide the lifeboats. But once you get into it, then you have to use your own skills, imagination, and ingenuity to navigate the open sea.
Yeah, this isn't some master control thing.
Exactly. So we believe that every human is endowed with a unique individual gift. And when you're free to bring that out, that's the Renaissance. And that has not happened. We've become all corporatized, homogenized, and I mean, what is this? This is a McDonald's and a Burger King.
Yeah, they're like androids. The public has literally taken on a false reality. Now that nightmare, hopefully, is about to end. Stay there. Back in 60 seconds with your calls.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Go to trendsresearch.com. You can subscribe to his trends tracking publication, the Trends Journal. Again, trendsresearch.com. My website's infowars.com. Gerald Celente is our guest. We're going to go ahead and go to your phone calls now. Thank you for holding. Steve in Texas, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
With the trend of big government that we've had in the last 8 years, and which will probably continue under the reign of Obama, do you see Obama or somebody like him being in office for more than 8 years, the repeal of the constitutional amendment that prevents a president being in there for more than two terms?
No, we really don't, because he's going to end up very unpopular. You know, people are putting more into this than it is. I mean, let's remember, he only got 52% of the vote. What was it when FDR came in, Alex? It was like 80% the second time around or something?
Absolutely, and hype dissipates a lot faster now. The people aren't very sophisticated in knowing they're being lied to, but more than ever, they know they're being lied to, and so they want instant gratification. If Obama doesn't deliver them to Valhalla instantly, they're going to turn against him. Gerald?
Yes, I agree with you. Not instantly. We give him at least six months. I mean, we could be wrong on this. You know, but again, you know, the people are so desperate. They're so desperate that they buy lines from a presidential reality show. Oh, by the way, I have to make this point. You know, Obama. This was an Oprah production. You know, I've been on every major TV show, and I've been on Oprah twice. Nobody does it like Oprah. She's the queen of TV, hands down. You go back to December when Oprah started to support Obama, the whole stage, the whole scenery, the whole performance changed.
Yeah, she took over.
She took over. This was an Oprah production. You saw it in his nomination speech, if you missed it before, and then you saw it in his acceptance speech, rather, and then you saw it after election day, election eve. You know, this great staging.
Yeah, so, she wants global power. She's got a church now, so she can put her money through that, and I don't want to use the term launder, but, you know, clean it up. And she's got a 2 million person church. She wants a global religion. I mean, this girl is We ain't seen nothing yet, huh?
So that's why I'm saying not to sell it so short, because this is a country that loves a reality show, and they certainly love the presidential reality
show. Well, by instantly, I meant like 6 months to a year in the scheme
of
things.
Yeah, we're probably talking around the same period.
All right, anything else there, Stephen?
Oh, no, thanks. Y'all have a wonderful day.
Thank you. Let's cram Tyler in California in. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, Mr. Jones? Mr. Slancy, how are you guys doing?
Fine. Go ahead.
Good. Hey, my question is, I am a reservist. I am an active reservist. I'm using my GI Bill to get my degree in history. And my family is a small business owners, and he's a rental construction equipment business owner. And according to my dad and some other guys in that business field, that things have, the economy started to slow down. Nobody's building anything anymore. People aren't doing like lawn and garden type things. They're not taking care of the yard because they don't have money to.
Yeah, it's dead. They better sell all that equipment now, even though it's already been depreciated because of the recession. We're going into depression. They need to get rid of everything now. Gerald?
Absolutely. You know, we're not telling him what to, telling you what to do, but you know, it's not going to get better. It's only going to get a lot worse. And when you talk about gardens, you know, during World War II they had victory gardens, and we should start thinking in those terms again. Stop ripping up these stupid lawns with grass that you can't eat or smoke, and put something productive down there. You know, like berry bushes and vegetables.
That's right. 40 years ago, even everybody had a garden in their front yard, but now the corporate said it wasn't trendy, so you can't do it.
Exactly. So really start thinking in terms of survival. These are survival times. The winter's coming. Prepare for it.
And folks,
again, you know, about going to getting a degree in history. You know, we're recommending to people that, you know, if you have a kid going to school and they're not getting a degree in, like, let's say, in medical
field. Hold on. Give us that advice after the break. Final segment with our guest.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Folks, the offshore corporations, they want a crisis to herd us into their solution that is a new world order. Run foreign by the banks. You'll pay a carbon tax into them. It's going to be hellish. You better take very seriously what our guest, who's worked at many different levels, in and out of government for major corporations, is one of the best trend projectors out there. He's able to project forward and really predict what's going to happen, Gerald Celente. And we've only got about 6, 7, 8 minutes left with him, so I want to hurry through your calls. But you know, people get mad at me, Gerald, when I get up here and I say, look, don't go into $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $100,000 in debt unless you're going to be a doctor or an engineer or a chemist, because those jobs you need a college degree, you're really taught something. But, you know, fine arts or history, folks, you can forget it. You're not going to have a job in the foreseeable future with that. And you do a lot better going out and learning how to be an exterminator or learning how to mow lawns. I mean, explain this to people.
Well, you hit it right on the head. I mean, people spending this kind of money for art history, psychology, business administration, you know, economics. I mean, my God, you know, get into the workforce and do like they did in the old days. Find yourself a master and become an apprentice, not the Donald Trump junk, but, you know, real business. And learn from the ground up, because people that are going to debt to send their kids into the college industrial complex are just throwing money away. And here's the most important part of it. The college industrial complex is built upon, again, the old model of filling people for the corporate field. That whole corporate paradigm is now dying, and the colleges are still geared up to filling that. So, you know, I mean, people sending their kids to a school because it has a great language course. Send the kids to the country where they want to speak the language and let them work and they'll learn it there, or get Rosetta Stone, but don't spend $40,000 or send them to the community college.
Yeah, we're seeing a giant paradigm shift, and take Joe the plumber. That guy's making a couple hundred grand a year. He's a plumber. I know people that own lawn companies, plumber companies, that are small, and they're living better than I am. And then I see these yuppies with 2, 3, 4 degrees, and they're working at the local grocery store.
Absolutely. Yeah, where are they going to get a job? You get out of college, you're going to go to work for the Sports Authority? You know, so, and the thing about, you know, working the lawns, again, now you go into business and you say, listen, we're going to turn your lawn into a productive piece of real estate. And you know, I'm Italian descent. I mean, we spent our were times in the backyards of my grandfather with grape arbors and rabbits and, you know, the whole thing. I mean, it's a beautiful setting rather than these sterile-looking, nothing, chemically treated lawns that are good for nothing. So that's the kind of innovation. Again, Alex, I can't express it or stress it enough. This is the time for innovation. And the people that think for themselves, and by the way, that's the motto of the Trends Research Institute, think for yourself.
You're going to be ahead, because once everybody rushes in, then you're just going to be able to survive instead of capitalizing on the future and getting out ahead, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, this is all about survival, about telling the truth, but studying the globalists, studying trends, studying the real world, it's a way to make a lot of money, isn't it, Gerald?
You're going to make more money now than you will before, because every schmo was in the game before because of all the cheap money. Now the intelligent people, this is a time for people that think for themselves, that are intelligent, that are true to their word, true to themselves, they can make a fortune during these times. These are the best of times for the people of a higher moral character.
You know what's amazing? I read your news articles over the years, but I've not subscribed. I know there's so much more in there, but separately on our own tracks, and it's the same with so many other great minds we interview here, we're all basically thinking the same or similar things, but then integrating and expanding each other's understandings. But I've got to subscribe to your publication, because I know it's got hundreds of things every issue, because I've seen copies of it that I don't think of. And then what will happen is I'll read your information, and then it spurs me to then hybridize it or come up with something new. Same thing with you on the show today. This is what the true college of research and understanding is all about. Let's jam in a few final calls and let our amazing guests go, who you will hear from again. Let's go ahead and talk to Casey. Oh, Casey just hung up. Let's talk to Aaron in Hawaii. You're on the air. Then we'll talk to Sheila, and that's it. Go ahead, Aaron.
Aloha. I just wanted to ask about they want to take over our 401ks. And about a month ago, my husband and I said we want out of the stock market. We want to sell all our stocks. And that was about 6 weeks ago. And they're not giving. I mean, they lost 60% of the value by that time, but they're not paying. They just keep giving us excuses on why we haven't gotten the money for that yet.
Listen,
well, I'll tell you why they give you excuses, because
okay.
A lot of them don't have the money. And I could tell you a problem
right.
that I had.
Okay.
I took all my money out of the banks.
Right.
You should see the song and dance I got.
Okay.
I mean, I had to go through. I mean, I had witnesses. I had to take a witness with me to get my money out of the bank, because I was having such a tough time. I didn't want to get arrested. It's like trying.
And that's how bad it is now. I don't even have that much money, and I try to take some out to pay payrolls in emergency, and the bastards wouldn't even give me like 10 grand.
I had to sign all these things. I mean, it was a real song and dance. So that's why they're not giving you money. They're trying to stall you, and they're going to tell you, they're going to give you all the reasons why you shouldn't take it out.
While the big money guys pull all their money out. See, they're only waiting while they get all their assets out.
You got it.
He's talking about bank runs by, next February?
Yes, we see them happening by February.
My.
Okay, anything else, Aaron?
Should we keep our money in the bank?
Absolutely not.
Well, I can't tell you what you to do, but I'll tell you what I do. We only keep enough money in the banks to for our operating expenses.
That's what I do.
As soon as it hits a certain level, it's out.
Yeah, that's what we do. And, of course, I'm not really in the job to even capitalize. Our job is getting the word out, so we don't have that big of a problem of a bunch of surplus. But we keep in there what we need to operate. But if they have a bank holiday, my office may even shut down, folks. You may hear us on air saying, send us money, because that's the type of situation. I mean, talk about confidence being lost, Gerald. What's going to happen if they do that?
Well, again, they don't do these things that overtly. They always put smoke screens around it. They're going to tell everybody how good it is for them, how we're salvaging the problem, and blaming somebody else. They'll blame, the majority of the sheeple will believe it.
Yeah, one more call. Appreciate the call, Aaron. Sheila in California, you're on the air with Gerald Celente. You can go to his website at trendsresearch.com.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm kind of new to your show, so you might have addressed this before, but it's a two-part question, excuse me, and what it has to deal with is, with the bankers getting their bailouts and there's pretty much no accountability, there's talk of many I know that say, well, I'm in debt at this point in time, and I'm a renter, and why should I pay my credit card debt, my student loans, et cetera? Why shouldn't I just take my credit cards, put it into a debt settlement, and lessen my load? And I'm asking this question because what I want to know is there any laws that you all are aware of that say, you know, those who do this have to pay it off in civil service
yes,
or whatever?
Yes, they're trying to strengthen it where the little guy has to pay back, but the big bankers and others don't have to. But a lot of people are purposefully running up cards. They're rebelling. It's kind of like a tax revolt, but it's overall a credit revolt. Gerald?
Well, let's remember who's the one that put in these pernicious bankruptcy laws was Joe Biden, the governor of the loophole state, Delaware. You know, he was the one that made it so hard for everybody, but gives the big guys the break. But don't forget, they're going to go after you no matter what. These are people that know no bounds. You know, they'll get your first child if that's what they have to do. It's not going to be an easy ride to get off the hook.
Yeah, people keep saying, well, why should I have gold? They might come take it. They might come blow your head off and put you in a FEMA camp. You know, why should I own a gun? They might take it. Exactly, folks. There's no perfect world. We're talking about getting the best position you can. Gerald?
Yeah, listen, I own both, gold and guns. So, as a matter of fact, that's where all my investments, other than the Trends Research Institute and my own properties, that I'm totally invested in.
Conservatively,
that.
And I'm going to let you go, and then we're going to have you back up in another month. You've agreed to do that. We appreciate it. When do you think gold's going to hit 2,000?
You know, it's hard to say because, as you know, these markets are being manipulated in front of our eyes. Remember, they wouldn't allow short selling. The game is being rigged. It's not even pulling a rabbit out of a hat. There's no hat. So we know that they are there report after report of banks buying tens of thousands of COMEX gold futures, shorting them, actually, not buying them, selling them, to keep the prices down. We believe that they're going to try to put that this G20 talks that are going on, gold, because once people start buying gold, then all of the fiat paper currencies, the fiat currencies are going to be worth nothing. The worst thing that the governments around the world are going to fear are people buying gold. And by the way, go to any of the websites of the big gold traders, Monex, Kitco, whatever.
They're selling for premiums.
Yeah, and they're selling for premiums, and they're telling you can't get delivery until a long time because there's a shortage of supply, and the shortage of supply is worldwide.
And that shows the manipulation. You have gold down by 100-something bucks, now going back up. Meanwhile, there's 30, 40, 50% premiums, and you can't get it. I mean, talk about global manipulation.
Exactly. So what we're saying is, you know, gold is, and again, we could be wrong. You know, we don't walk on water, and we're only human. But I'm telling you what I do and what I believe, and I put all my investment capital is in gold.
What about silver?
You know, silver's a good one, too, but silver also has production purposes as well. And gold, you know, I would say both of them, but I know gold. I've been following gold. My first buy of gold was in 1978 at $187.50 an ounce. And, you know, I've been buying it and following it since that time. So I'm not that well versed in silver as I am.
I understand. You trade in what you love and what you know and what you research. Well, Gerald Celente, ladies and gentlemen, the market trend research man, trendresearch.com. Thank you for spending an hour and 20 minutes with us, and we'll talk to you again sometime in December. Godspeed.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Well, you bet. What an amazing individual. We're going to come back. We've got Max Kaiser coming up, looking at the economy and taking your phone calls. And then I promise to do it. I've boiled down the most powerful 30 minutes of last Friday's hearings. Well, Rob Jacobson has in there in the control room, and we're going to be playing that. Max Kaiser's coming up. I got a lot of other news. Folks, I've got stacks of articles where the police, the government, the military, the bureaucrats, they just do whatever they want now. I mean, corruption is just spreading everywhere. The government is insane. The population is decadent scum. What do we, the people that want liberty and freedom, do? We get prepared. We wake up as many people that care to hear the truth as we can. And we don't go to FEMA camps. We don't go to work brigades. They're openly talking about that. It's in the executive orders. Let me give you all a message. I'm not going to FEMA camps. I'm not working in slave labor. I'm not going to lick your boots. You're going to have to put me 6 feet under. And you know what that means? To do that, you're going to have to go all the way up against me and millions of other people. You may catch a few of us in the dark of night at 4 a.m. when you're stealing houses and neighborhoods and everything else for your crime bosses. But in the end, you're going to get your butts kicked. So I'd back off now and join the American people. You know we're in the right. You know the New World Order is real. Your bosses are poisoning you. The New World Order is a bunch of sickos. And it's all by design. I'm not going to spend more than 3 minutes with him. I drug him in here because I heard Gerald Celente talking about gold. Folks, this is a buying opportunity. Gold's back up again today. It's up about $50 in the last week. And all I can say is it is a buying opportunity right now. Ted Anderson, please tell folks about today's special offer.
Yeah, right. Gold is backing down this morning. It's back up now. Right now we have, I can do the same thing I did last Friday. Right now I have the franc currently right now at 187. The British sovereign currently right now at 228. Both of those are, you know, that franc is $11 off from the last time I had offered them. The British sovereign's off closer to 20. I also have the Walking Liberties in silver. I mean, silver is really a good buy, too. Let's face it, when it comes down to buying groceries, you're going to need some of that silver.
And by the way, most, even big firms, are sold out, or it's at a 30, 40, 50% premium, even on bullion, and they tell you months. Ted has this in a bank vault in Minnesota. It ships out every day. He has it on hand, ladies and gentlemen. Ted, tell them.
Yeah, you're right about that. And in addition to this, people right now in the futures market are trying to take physical delivery there, and it's like fractional reserve banking. There's not enough to go around.
So there's now a run on the paper gold because they just manipulated and shorted the market to drive it down. Explain that, Ted.
Well, because it takes a lot of gold to lend in order for you to buy these shorts. If you're selling something you don't have, it to actually sell it, it means you have to borrow it from somebody else. Usually it comes from the central banks, and that's why you're seeing that kind of manipulation, and people are coming to that where the banks are selling gold. That's what they're doing right now. They're trying to sell their own reserves, but they're short.
They've been caught using the bailout money too in the shorting.
Yeah, so all this manipulation's going on, but the physical demand market, the stuff that's actually out there, the coin gold, that stuff is trading at premiums anywhere from $100 to $150 over spot. And so there's this complete arbitrage going on where there's one market is being suppressed and the other one is saying, no, we're up here because they can't manipulate that. It's about physical supply.
Ted, give them your whole portfolio. I mean, I know you've got a lot of other stuff, but some of it, our collectors, and have a bigger premium.
We got $10 Indians right now. They're at $673. I've got the $10 Liberties. They're at $653. That's a good buy. I have the confiscation proof $5 commemorative pieces that the U.S. Mint put out as collector coins.
And you've got great deals on all those, but the very best for just a collector coin at bullion prices, even below because you bought it when gold was down. You've got francs. You've got sovereigns.
We have U.S. Eagles, we have Canadian Maple Leafs, we have...
Wait a minute, you have Canadian Maple Leafs?
We have some Canadian Maple Leafs, very short supply in that stuff.
How many?
I'll be lucky to do 50 of them. I mean, that's...
Oh, really? How much are those?
Well, they're currently trading right now in the range of just under $900 each.
Okay, regardless, folks, $900?
Yeah, just under that. And
that is an insane deal. That coin's got huge premiums. I see those things for $1,200 right now.
Oh, I know it. But
okay, well, I mean, here's the number, 800-686-2237, 800-686-2237. And last week I told Ted I was going to buy some Indians. I got so busy, I didn't even do it. This happens to all of us, folks. Do not procrastinate. 800-686-2237. Tell them Alex Jones and Ted Anderson sent you. Tell them it's the radio special, or you will be paying more for Maple Leafs and more for American Eagles and more for the Franks and more for the Sovereigns. This is the radio special, okay? You have to tell them that. 800-686-2237. 2237 real fast. Tell them the prices so folks can quote them.
Well, right now, what you're going to ask for is the franc right now is at 187. The sovereign right now is at 228. The $10 Indian, 673. That is a fabulous coin. And then, of course, the Walking Liberty half, 840. And I think that's about all I have time for. There's more. Just call in.
All right. And people will be there till midnight tonight.
Central. Oh, absolutely.
800-686-2237. You're listening at midnight. Call 800-686-2237. Protect yourself from the New World Order vultures. 800-686-2237. We'll be right back. Stay with me, Max Kaiser.
He's pounded down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some devil mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana, and we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, loaded up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
For the next 50 minutes or so, we're going to open the phones up and let you talk to Max Kaiser. He does international television for, well, you name it. He's invented major systems used on stock markets worldwide. He's producing an international TV show for the BBC with Alec Baldwin. Just check out his website, maxkaiser.com, because the guy is doing too much to ever tell you about it all. But before we go to him, I want to tell you about some fabulous sponsors that make this radio show possible. This is where I get my storable food, and as crazy as things are, you better believe I got an attic absolutely full of it, 3-year-plus supply for my wife and my children and me. And you know what? If I don't use it in 10, 15 years, I can throw it out, or I can give it to charity, which I'll do before it gets bad, and then I feel good. And I got firearms, too. I'm not a slave, and I don't trust the government to take care of me, you know, if we have a Great Depression. So give the great folks at eFoods Direct a call, 800-409-5633. Get a free brochure or a free audio CD. They're the longest continually operated storable foods company in the nation. Really high quality, 800-409-5633, and great prices, eFoodsDirect.com. You'll never have to stand in a bread line if you have your own bread, eFoodsDirect.com. Just wonderful folks. Please write that number down, 800-409-5633. There's operators there 24 hours a day, but during regular business hours, they have specialists. They forward the phones to the food factory. That's right. They actually prepare it. They buy it. None of it's GMO. So, again, eFoodsDirect.com. And then another fabulous sponsor. It's the same thing. Willie Nelson has his own machine, but it's the same machine, basically. Ours is a Cola Blue. It's fabulous. This is the hottest thing out there. I got it in my house, my office. The water is so good, it will blow your mind. It grabs it out of the atmosphere. It does 7.5 gallons in your average humidity. It'll do more than that in, you know, really tropic areas, and about half of that in desert, 3 gallons a day. ECOLOBlue.com, ECOLOBlue.com, ACOLABlue.com, or 866-585-4044, 866-585-4044. Atmospheric water generator for your home, pays for itself in 1 year if you buy water from the store, pure clean water without the fluoride. Unlimited water from the humidity in the air, then it goes through 5 filters inside of it. Check it out at acolablue.com or 866-585-4044. All right, going to Max Kaiser. Max, a lot is happening. The economy is worsening very quickly. I had Gerald Celente on last hour, and I mean, he's talking about war in the streets within 2 to 3 years, and that we'll have bank runs in February. What do you say to that?
Well, Alex, I think if you look around the world, you're already seeing evidence of that, and I'll give you 2 examples. It was reported today in the Independent newspaper in the United Kingdom that gangs from the city are invading the country, and they're stealing livestock from people's farms. They're stealing salmon and farmed fish from farm fisheries. And you've already got this happening in the UK right now. People are, gangs from the city are invading the country and stealing food. If you look at the global picture, you see that in around the world, you know, the corporations have taken over all the fishing rights around the world. So in Somalia, you've got Somali pirates who are starving to death. They are hijacking one ship every day on average just for food.
And they just grabbed a huge oil tanker today, so their targets are getting bigger.
Exactly. And they're being tracked by the U.S. and the U.K., you know, the Navy's out there. But these are people who are starving to death because all of their food supplies have been taken from them by the huge corporations. So this is what's happening on the fringe of the, you know, if you're in the United States, and your view is that you know, these other areas are on the periphery of the biggest economy in the world, so-called the U.S., you can see the trends developing on the fringe, on the periphery, and I think they're heading toward the U.S. But you see it already right now happening around the world.
Max, again, for folks that don't know who you are, currently, I mean, tell us a little bit about yourself and then currently what you're most focused on and what you think is most important in the world right now, and then trends that you see going into the, you know, midterm and long term, how bad you think it's really going to get.
Well, just to follow up on a couple of things from when we spoke last time, you know, we were talking about the gold market, we were talking about COMEX and the fact that COMEX is short gold that they can't deliver, and that some people are out there trying to organize a raid on the COMEX. I was talking to some folks today in Canada. Apparently, Eric Sprott of Sprott Asset Management is going to try to take physical delivery of a huge precious metal position on the COMEX this December to try to force the price from the physical and the paper market to match up. So that could be, that's still in play. Remember last time I was mentioning that there could be a major event on the COMEX in December?
Yes, you did say that, but flesh that out a bit. For folks that don't know what shorting is and don't know what the COMEX is, explain.
Okay, well, shorting is actually something that's come up in a couple of big stories today, and it relates directly to Goldman Sachs as well. So I'll segue into the Goldman Sachs thing. But a little bit about shorting, it's one of those concepts that people have trouble wrapping their mind around. It's a little counterintuitive. But, you know, if I can break it down as simply, is, you know, people are familiar with the idea of borrowing money to buy a stock, and if the stock goes up, they sell it for a profit, and they pay back their loan. When you're selling short stock, you're borrowing stock, and you're selling that stock, and you're hoping that the price goes down, and after the price goes down, you buy back your stock at the lower price, and you return it to where you borrowed it from. But because the stock is now at a lower price, the amount of money it took to buy it back is less, you get to keep the difference. That's how you make money on a short sale. And it works on stocks, and it works on commodities, and it works on the COMEX. And the COMEX is where all the biggest precious metal futures operation in the world, and as has been pointed out by numerous guests on your show, the big bankers in the world who love the idea of fractional reserve banking and love the idea of infinite credit, they hate gold, they hate precious metals because it's a limited supply, and they don't like to live in a world of limits. They like to live in a world of infinite credit. So it's in their interest to try to keep those precious metals down. And they do this primarily by selling gold and silver short. They're selling gold and silver contracts that they do not own, and they borrowed for the most part, and they do this with borrowed money, and they can borrow money quite cheaply. The scandal here is something called naked short selling. And naked short selling applies both to the COMEX, in my opinion, and to what Goldman Sachs has been doing, which is the opinion now of Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal and observers around the world.
Well, there's
now,
no doubt they've been doing it. They've been doing it to stocks they recommend to people.
Right. So naked short selling is nothing more than counterfeiting. It's just straight out counterfeiting. And this is now, I listen to your show, of course, Alex, I'm a big fan. And when you talk about the Illuminati and the globalists and the New World Order, you can condense all those terms into basically two words, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
Goldman Sachs is the epicenter of the entire global banking.
By the way, you're not joking. They even had a big global advisor on CNBC a few weeks ago, and he said the Illuminati is doing this. So now we're starting to see that even come out, but go ahead.
Right. I mean, There's no need to get look beyond Goldman Sachs, is my point. You've got now Senator Inhofe is saying that Goldman Sachs is he's accusing Goldman Sachs openly that they're giving money from the bailout money to their friends. They want an investigation. You've got Bernie Sanders in Vermont who thinks that Goldman Sachs is a conflict of interest. He wants an investigation.
Yeah, by the way, that's the AP headline, just interrupting back you up, is that Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, very powerful Republican senator, is saying that they're giving it to their friends and others. And it's not even being denied that that's going on. It's also being used for bonuses. Go ahead.
Yeah. Chuck Grassley, he's a senior GOP on the Senate Finance Committee. He just came out today within the last 2 hours. And it suggests that Goldman Sachs is double dealing. Goldman Sachs is a conflict of interest. Goldman Sachs is involved in naked short selling. Goldman Sachs is at the heart of the American economic and banking collapse.
Is that why they're keeping, I mean, it was Goldman Sachs guys in the 90s that changed all the rules and in the 2000s with Bush. And now you notice it's an inner group of Goldman Sachs running the bailout, running Treasury, running the Fed, and that they're bringing more Goldman Sachs people now into it as well. Is that to keep it, you know, keep the conspiracy in a closed circle?
Absolutely. As part of the bailout package, they slipped into the package a tax break to give the bankers $140, $150 billion tax break.
Okay, so now it's openly being discussed that they're stealing it, and Goldman Sachs just laughs. Why are they so arrogant?
Because there's been a coup d'etat. You know, there's been a coup d'etat. Hank Paulson has dictatorial powers. When I was on your show last time, I believe it was when I was on your show last time, or I might have been on another network.
No, you were here. You were here.
And I was saying that basically they have achieved through this $700 billion, which became an $850 billion bailout. It didn't matter what the number was. The number was arbitrary. The key concept was it gives them dictatorial powers.
That's the key concept. That is the
That's
key.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They have dictatorial powers, and they are literally have ensconced themselves in a fortress in Washington with the Washington Wall Street connection.
But just because they say they're God and just because they say they can barbecue children on their front porch doesn't mean they can. They had laws saying black people weren't human in this country, and we know those were bull and they were overthrown. So what do we do about these arrogant criminals, Wall Street frat guys? I'm not bashing Yaleys and people, but it's that arrogant. I mean, watching Kash Kari with the smart mouth comments, the glare last week. I mean, these are some arrogant little bastards.
Well, I mean, I was on Al Jazeera yesterday morning. I sent you the clip.
Yeah, we're going to play it.
I used some language that I'm not sure Americans have heard in this context. But, the point is that these guys have as you point out, I mean, they are literally, they pull down their pants and are literally giving a golden shower into the face of 300 million Americans. And unless you are into golden showers, unless you are into S&M, unless you enjoy that kind of thing, I would suggest that you begin to, take some steps. I mean, I've been an observer for markets for 25 years, and I have seen examples of egregious, electronic thieving, as we do. I was working on Wall Street in the 1980s. I know many of the tricks that one can use in the bank to transfer wealth. Electronic pickpocketing, we used to call it. It's just electronically transferring wealth from the customers to the bankers. That's all pretty much the job entails. The techniques are pretty standard. And the beautiful thing about it, Alex, if you ever worked on Wall Street, is that typically when the management comes around and says, unless you're being sued, you're not really doing your job. We've got plenty of lawyers. Just keep racking up the commissions. We've got lawyers. Just keep racking up the commissions. And the beautiful thing about it is that if, in fact, it ever gets to the point where there's a serious problem, two things. Number one, when you sign a new customer account, it forces you to go to arbitration.
Well, the people that steal and cheat and make the most money, they get promoted. They go, wow, you've been indicted. As soon as our lawyers fix this, you're going to be going up to vice president.
It shows initiative.
Yeah.
It shows initiative, or they simply change the laws. You see, they simply change the law. The securities, the SEC is overworked and understaffed on purpose. If things get really tight, You know, if you can't...
Here's an example. Under Bush, and this is all over the news, over 90% of the corporate white-collar crime investigators were pulled off, and they weren't put on anti-terror. If you read deeply, they were put on mom and pops. So what happens is big, too-large-to-fail groups can steal, kill. Halliburton can run white slavery camps. It can be in mainstream news. Nothing happens to them, but then a pet store owner, a guy that owns a used car lot, a dentist, somebody who has a hamburger place, the IRS will rake them over the coals for no reason. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they'll change the laws basically to suit it's for their convenience. Bankers are constantly changing the laws, changing the products. You know, it's like a three card Monte game in the city. You know, you see these guys, they're playing three card Monte. And the cops show up, they can fold up in 5 seconds, and 5 minutes later they shut up across the street. So if they just go from scam to scam to scam, it's basically the same scam, but repeated in different
forms. So where is this going? I mean, the whole culture is going into total corruption. Their government's expanding, government's feeding, you know, no different from administration to administration. How bad is it going to get when the immovable object meets the unstoppable force? What is going to happen? A lot of trends, projectors, a lot of experts who've been right in the past are saying it's going to end up war on the streets.
Well, there's also another thing going on, which is I call the sixes versus the nines. This is the people with six zeros in their net worth, the millionaires, versus people with nine zeros in their net worth, the billionaires. Because after 9/11, when they dropped interest rates down to 1%, they screwed up the economy so badly that now, 7-8 years later, the system is so badly screwed up that you've got wars broken out between the billionaires and the millionaires. So even a millionaire is like $5, $10, $15 million. People who thought they were wealthy a couple of years ago are getting squeezed due to the global credit collapse. So you're seeing, like, for example, Goldman Sachs is at war with its own customers. And this was today in today's Bloomberg. Here's an example of this. Goldman was targeted by investor complaints of naked short selling. Bloomberg. Investors in a $591 billion high-yield, high-risk loan market are accusing Goldman of naked short-selling to profit from record price declines. At least two fund managers complained that they were victimized by Goldman, for whom they were doing business with. So you've got wars broken up between the millionaires and the billionaires. And they're shooting at each other using these credit derivative products and other.
So this is only going to get worse. And then also hear blue collar folks say, I don't care. I don't own stock. I don't care about some millionaire. Well, you better. They're the ones that buy the products at your shops. They're the ones that spend money in the economy, not the billionaires. They all hoard it on average. It's the millionaires that actually are funding the general public. And so what happens when the IRS is going to scalp the millionaires? What's going to happen?
Well, the problem is that the global credit system is so badly screwed. You look at the what's called the Baltic Dry Index, which tracks the global shipping industry. 4 months ago, it cost something like $150,000 to send a ship from China to America. The price has dropped down to $4,000. It's down something like 98.5%. There's literally stockpiles of grain stacked up on the in the port because all global shipping has come to a halt because no one can get a letter of credit to send a ship from point A
exactly.
To point B.
And Ford and GM can't get letters for the insurance for the parts manufacturers, the insurance on the subcontractors that sell them the parts, so they're coming to an end. Max Kaiser, let's talk about it when we get back.
Well, I'm not the guy.
Hey, let's go ahead and play that CNBC clip with one of the bigwigs on TV saying, yeah, it's the Illuminati. Here it is.
At least you're getting back to the point where you can start to look at fundamentals, and that's good news. What happened?
I think you're in a liquidation phase. I think Kirsten had it exactly right. I think there's a bunch of wrong-footed moves by Hank Paulson and the Illuminati of the country, if you will, and I think we're paying for it right now.
All right. Max Kaiser... We've always, for the last 100 years at least, had a very corrupt Wall Street elite that is engaged in some crime and some skimming and some manipulation, but it was more boss hog-like. This is so virulent. This is so out in the open. They're blowing their whole game. Is it because the elite knows the dollar's dead and they're bringing us into a new world monetary system that they're just going for broke? I mean, why? I've never seen, and I've studied a lot of history, so have you, such open arrogance. I mean, that level of chutzpah or arrogance, of bravado, kind of shakes me up because I mean, if they'll steal $5 trillion in a month right in front of you and laugh at you, what are they planning next, Max Keiser?
Yeah, well, clearly the U.S. dollar is an endangered species as such, and I think a devaluation is all but certain. And the question is, when devaluation is going to take place? There'll be a global devaluation of all the major currencies, and then a revaluation upward for the price of gold. This is exactly what happened in the 1930s. And to discourage profiteering on the gold side, you might see my friend Eric Jansen over at iTulip.com thinks that they'll impose like a 90% capital gains tax on gold ownership at that point. So gold, as you know, I'm a big believer in gold, and I think you have to own gold as a core investment. I think you need it to protect yourself. But it's not as if the government cannot implement strategies to upset the gold owning.
Yeah, they won't do a 1933 War Powers Act gold confiscation. They'll just slap a 50, 60, 70, 80, 90% capital gains tax on it. And folks are like, well, then I better not do that. Well, that's better than just having them devalue it in the bank or have bank holidays. I mean, you know, I mean, these people.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah, you got to have a strategy. You know, you really have to take a defensive position, because I think what these guys are telegraphing is, you know, it's so easy for them to steal so much money these days. I think that they're telling you that they're coming, and they want you to, you know, get in shape and work out and prepare yourself, because they want a good fight. You know, it's like those movies you see sometimes where the sadistic millionaire sets the humans out and goes hunts the humans. But he lets him get a head start because he wants to give himself a little bit of a sport. And I think what these guys like Kashgari are telling the American people is, get ready now because we're coming.
Because he knows. He's got the SWAT teams. He's got the military. I mean, he's got it all, and he wants you to know we're going to rape you good. Get ready.
We'll give you a head start, and you know, because we want to make this fun for us.
Yeah, the destruction of America is so much fun.
That's the message that he's saying. I mean, obviously, if, you know, the fact that the American so-called democracy is toothless in the face of what is obvious tyranny is quite shocking at this point in the country's history.
But, Max, you know, as you know, Obama will save us.
Well, you know, on my last time on your show, I'm not hitting the you know, anti-Obama button. You know, I'm holding back on my opinion. I'm gonna give the guy a few months in office, and then see what happens. Because you know, I do think that
no, I understand, but I mean, the guy's a puppet. I mean, if he didn't do what they told him, he'd get a Dealey Plaza visit from the Secret Services there to guard him. So we all know that. My whole point is all these Obamanoids are in for a rude awakening, because there's no course changes here. It's full-scale raping. We'll be right back with Max Keiser in 60 seconds. Stay with us. Your call straight ahead.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCN Live.
Go ahead and leave this on air. Because we've been live at PrisonPlanet.tv for 30 minutes, and I want all the PrisonPlanet.tv listeners out there to be able to tune in and even hear the behind-the-scenes. John, give me a new call list so I don't get any of these mixed up. Please.
Okay, I'll type that right now.
Okay, thank you, sir. 1-800-259-9231. Phone calls for Max Keiser. Again, for people out there listening, we're not on the AM and FM dial or shortwave or satellite right now. This is PrisonPlanet.tv viewers and Infowars.com exclusive audio stream listeners. And coming up in about 20 minutes after Max Keiser leaves us, we've boiled down from 4 hours of testimony by the arrogant Kashgari, and by arrogant, oh, I thank you, I respect you, oh, sir, I'm working so hard, but he was just looking at him, and the body language was smiling and smirking and just, I don't care, you're a slave, I own you. We've boiled it down to the most powerful 30 minutes of 4 hours. And believe me, it was difficult to cut it down to this because there's so much good stuff there. We've cut out a few of his answers because he kept repeating the same thing over and over again. That's coming up in 20 minutes after Max Keiser leaves us. Right now, we're going to be taking your phone calls on a host of issues with our guest, Max Keiser. So stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. We'll be right back. Our guest is Max Kaiser for the next 20 minutes. Really appreciate him joining us. I want to go ahead and go to your phone calls here in this segment and the next. Mike, David, Kevin, Daniel, and many others holding around the country and the world. Toll-free number to join us, 1-800-259-9231. I do want to squeeze a lot of calls in, though, so just have your question or comment ready so we can get to the next person. Max, any other points you haven't gotten to? I mean, you were talking about the ships aren't moving, 98% reduction, because no one has money or has the credit to even ship the products. Same thing with Ford and GM saying that they can't even get the insurance ratings to have their parts suppliers overseas. These aren't American companies to ship over here. I mean, it looks like the economy is dead, but the brain's still going to get oxygen for a few minutes, maybe 6 months more. But it looks like the economy has just come to a standstill.
Yeah, it's a zombie. And if you look at countries around the world, it's already happening. Obviously, in Iceland, the entire economy, because of banking tricks that went bad, the entire economy went offline. The krona, the Icelandic krona, became worthless, and they're on life support system from the IMF. 30% of the population is trying to emigrate out of Iceland today. 30%. Imagine in America, that would be 100 million people.
And by the way, Iceland was a wondrous first world nation before this.
Iceland, 6 months ago, was considered to be, you know, exactly an example of the new world order, if you will, to put it into your terms, you know, as a shining example of banking, as arbitrage, of all the banking products that would make everybody rich.
No one could immigrate there. I mean, even if he had $10 million, it was harder to get into than New Zealand.
Yeah, and the whole thing went offline in a matter of weeks. All the savings in the UK, people put their savings into Iceland because they were getting 6 or 7%. All those savings evaporated in one day. The UK government paid off those savers in the UK. Now they're suing Iceland to get the money, as are other countries in Europe and around the world.
And by the way, Iceland. There's not even food on most of the store shelves in Iceland.
That's right.
It's just like Argentina, folks, because these bankers can't help it. You turn the back, they have to stick it in you. It's like a psycho that has to kidnap little kids and kill them. I mean, they just got to do it. Max.
Also, on the gold front, you saw over the weekend that the finance minister in Iran has now officially come out and said that they're moving most of their $120 billion reserves into gold bullion.
That's right. London Guardian, Iran switches reserve to gold report, and that's happening all over the world right now. Central South America moving off the dollar. Meanwhile, the American yuppies are watching football, acting tough. They're delusional. They're stomping around, drinking Kool-Aid. What is going to happen when the American people find out just how bad they've been set up?
That's right. Sweeney Todd, the demon barber of Fleet Street. I think I'm going to see a lot of yuppie burgers being served at various outlets.
I agree. In fact, give me the document, Cam. I want to show folks this London Guardian article. Iran switches reserve.
I'm not going to play my video from yesterday. It might be too hot for your show, Alex.
No, it's not that. The audio is distorted, but we are going to play it. I just wanted him to. It's a little overdriven, but it's great from what this.
Oh, overdriven. Oh, that is code word. That's code word. I wouldn't expect that from Alex.
No.
Overdriven.
This is from Al Jazeera.
For your audience.
This is when you were on Al Jazeera. And of course, you have a TV show on Al Jazeera, which is, by the way, people say, Al Jazeera, that's Saudi Arabia or whatever. No, folks, this is based out of England. It's like their world service.
Al Jazeera is in Qatar, which has the biggest military base of America outside of the United States.
Yeah, Qatar.
Which is where Al Jazeera is, America's ally.
Qatar or whatever. I'm always saying it wrong.
Okay. Now, you also...
Potato.
I should remind you, on November 28th, Alex, it looks like the first episode of The Oracle is going to be on BBC World.
And last time I was on your show, I said I was going to invite you. If, in fact, we do the November 28th premiere show on BBC World, it goes out to 180 million people. Max Kaiser presents The Oracle. I think I got it hooked up. I can bring you in satellite, do a little, you know, 3 or 4 minute interview.
I want it. Let's do it. Please put me on The Oracle, produced by Max Kaiser and Alec Baldwin. I couldn't think of anything more exciting. But stay there. By the way, I forgot about your clip. And I'm not afraid to play your clip. That's a great way to build it up. Max Kaiser, MaxKaiser.com. Your phone call straight ahead with our guest. Stay with us.
More than 700 chemicals.
Now we're going to keep talking. Let me go ahead and talk to Kaiser. Hey, Max?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the internet now. No, we will come back and play that clip. What's about 3.5 minutes long?
Yeah, not even. It's like three.
2.5, 3. Let me bring the culprit in. John, we are not making this up. John, it was telling me it was distorted, but I still said we're going to play it. Right, John?
Yes, sir. You asked if I had it. I said yes, and I told him that it was a little distorted, but we can definitely play it. 3:15.
But that's just whoever loaded it
whoever
up.
Whoever uploaded it.
Whoever uploaded it up on there. Well, let's do that.
I'll tell you, Alex, I don't come in until 35 seconds. So the first 35 seconds you can eliminate.
Yeah, it's no big deal. Yeah, go ahead and eliminate and just cut right to Kaiser. Well, you know what? People won't know what it is. Just play the whole thing. Come in with it, then play the music, and we'll go back to Max Kaiser. And, Max, I love having you on. I really appreciate you. And, yes, I want to come on your BBC TV show.
Yeah, you know, when I was doing my Al Jazeera films 2 years ago, Alex, not a single media outlet in America would even talk to me.
Well, we are, of course, just alternative radio, only on about 70 stations, but we are really honored to have you here. And I mean, the info you're putting out, the info I'm putting out, I'm telling the audience this, is just getting hotter and hotter. And so that's the exciting thing, is that the bankers think they're getting away with this. I don't think in the final equation they're going to get away with it. What do you say, Max?
Well, as long as there's a spirit of freedom and burning in the hearts of Americans, then the bankers are going to have trouble.
We only have about a minute left before we come back to the full audience, but behind the scenes, tell folks about the specific stock market system that you're the inventor of, because I find that to be intriguing.
The virtual specialist technology is a technology that it allows for a virtual currency to trade on an exchange, and you can trade virtual securities. And the valuation is tied to something intangible like awareness. So on the Hollywood Stock Exchange, depending on what people's awareness is of a movie that's going to come out in 6 months or a year, their trading, buying and selling those securities creates a need to match those orders, and to match those orders in a way where all prices over all securities, the price is consistent, there's price parity. So in this system, the virtual specialist technology is a virtual economy that prices thousands of securities simultaneously within an environment where there is no hard assets. Like on the New York Stock Exchange, there's still earnings that are tied to profits and cash, et cetera. This is based entirely on people's awareness, but you still have price parity, so it's a completely fair system within the economy. So that system was sold to Cantor Fitzgerald, who moved the technology to the top floor of the World Trade Towers 3 months before the crash. That's how I know what was going on in the World Trade Towers.
Stay there. We're about to go live. We'll finish that story. Here we go.
It's very precise. This is a very complicated problem, and we cannot fix it without some international rules.
Notably absent from the summit's final statement, any detailed plan to help troubled homeowners or struggling workers in the developing world. That wasn't expected. But with economists projecting a global recession that could last upwards of 2 years, one might be justified in asking whether these leaders really feel the urgency of the situation. Rosalind Wharton, Al Jazeera, Washington.
Well, let's get a European perspective on all of that. Max Kaiser is a financial commentator based in Paris and joins us live. Max, positive words there from the world leaders. Will the financial markets be cheering on Monday morning?
No, Bush misspoke. He said that the world's economies were hit hard. That's not true. The world's counterfeiting schemes were hit hard. The bond counterfeiting schemes from Wall Street and the City of London were hit hard. The counterfeiting schemes have been exposed. And the problem is that these G20 nations are not willing to get rid of the scoundrels and the criminals who are running the banks and putting in fraudulent, faulty economy. Somebody should issue a fatwa against Hank Paulson. Someone should issue a fatwa against Hank Paulson because he's an infidel. This is the Constitution of the United States. He's not obeying the spirit of the Constitution. He's issuing counterfeit money, counterfeit bonds. That's why the global economy is in such a sad shape.
Okay,
the man is
Max.
A financial terrorist. And
The hyperbole aside,
I mean, that's the reality of the situation. That's not the hyperbole.
Well, I'm sure
that's
they're not
counterfeit. That's the reality of the situation.
So the solution is what?
Counterfeit.
The solution is what?
You have to go into a court of law and take Hank Paulson and Goldman Sachs up for financial terrorism, put them in jail. This is counterfeiting. They're issuing bonds that are absolutely non-collateralized. There's $500 trillion dollars with no collateral.
That may be one response to Hank Paulson, but as far as the international global economy is concerned, we have matters like, should the IMF be reformed? Should countries like China and India have a bigger say in regulation and moderation of the global markets? Did any of these get addressed, and are these the way forward?
China, India, Europe, all the banks own structured financial products sold to them from Wall Street. These are all counterfeit bonds that are exploding. They're worth zero. For example, they have no way of selling these bonds because they have zero value. As a result, they dump oil. And oil, because they're dumping oil to pay for these fraudulent bonds, the price of oil has dropped and these developing nations are suffering because of this counterfeiting scheme that has zero value. Bush is completely incorrect when he says the global economy is suffering. It's the global counterfeiting scheme that's suffering. These guys are criminals. There should be a fatwa against these guys. He's an infidel. Hank Paulson, his head should be bouncing down the Capitol steps.
Max Kaiser,
I'm sorry, but that's the reality of the situation.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, he was speaking, I guess, to the Arabic audience there, though it's big worldwide, talking about fatwas. Ron Paul said here about a month and a half ago they should all be arrested. They are criminals, but they know that they're doing it out in the open, too big to fail, too big to be criminals. Well, either they fall or we fall. Max Kaiser, I hadn't seen that clip. I just knew you'd sent it, and so I'd sent it on to the network. Actually, my producer had. Now I know why you wanted it played. That is some powerful stuff. You know, when I go on Al Jazeera or Press TV or BBC or Russia Today, I thought I was getting hardcore on these channels. My God, Max Kaiser's like the gold standard of in-the-face, telling-the-truth boldness. I'm actually being put to shame here. You mean, I wonder if they'll let me get that wild on there.
Well, I want you on the Oracle, Alex.
I guess you and Alec Baldwin are the producers of it. You think nobody will get upset if I go on there yelling and screaming, or is this going to be live?
This show is going to rip the ball, you know, the cover off the ball. This is going to be the most watched television show in the world. We're going to have 100 million viewers. It goes out to 180 million households, half-hour show every Friday night. So we're going to be talking about all the global banking conspiracies and everything else that people are dying to know about, but they're not being told. Because the mainstream press, even Al Jazeera, is too timid.
So Alec Baldwin is into all this stuff.
Yeah, he's my co-producer. I've known him for 30 years, and we've been friends for a long, long time. And, you know, we're going to have a blast. He's going to be a guest. His friends are going to be guests. We've got a satellite hookup. November 28th, we're hopefully going to get the first show on the air on BBC World.
Well, hey, count me in. You just have the producers or the people doing the legwork tell me where to be, what satellite feed. And if you can't even get a satellite feed in Austin, which I'm sure you'll be able to. It was hard on election day for some other stations I was on. I'll go wherever I need to be on that.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, you know, the use of the word fatwa, for example, all that means is edict or fiat.
No, I understand. I'm saying arrest them, yeah.
Okay, but let me just say.
Guilty. Go ahead.
Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke issue a fatwa every day. It's called the U.S. dollar by fiat. The U.S. dollar only has value by Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke's fatwa.
By the way, you're right about the stock market going down. It's down 85 points today. How far is it going to go down by next February?
Well, it's going to go a lot lower, you know, the stock market, because earnings for these companies are going to collapse. You know, obviously, the unemployment is skyrocketing. Citibank just announced 50,000 layoffs. The auto industry is going to collapse. I'm not in favor of bailing out the auto industry. I think it's a farce. Unemployment is going to go to 10, 11, 12% at a minimum. And, you know, the earnings are going to collapse. So these companies are going to trade down. You know, the average yield in a bear market gets to 6 or 7%, which means you're talking 3,000 on the Dow Jones.
Doesn't look good. You know, I want to jam in a few calls. The interview's almost over. Time just flies because I promised to play these highlights of the amazing Kashkari committee hearings last Friday. But I want to go to Mike, David, Kevin, Daniel, Rob. Guys, just ask one question of Kaiser quickly, please, because I want to get you on. Mike in California, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Only one question,
Go ahead.
Only one question, Alex.
Hmm.
Oh man. Anyway, let me pick my best one.
Just ask them all if we're going to spend time figuring out which one to ask. Go ahead.
I'm sorry about that, Alex.
No, don't be sorry. I'm sorry I don't have enough time. Okay. Hell, I'll just skip playing the clips. We'll play them tomorrow. We got plenty of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, just sit back and hear the question.
All right, well, with the fires occurring in California and all these people losing their homes and whatnot, will their insurance companies be able to cover them?
Oh, no. I mean, in the short term, perhaps, but look, the insurance companies are part and parcel with this global credit crunch. They're running out of money. Even Warren Buffett, you know, his stock is down 50% this year. He's a big insurance.
Look, what happened is they took the cop tuitions, the police, the teacher, retirement funds. It was all invested in derivatives. The bankers stole it all. Okay.
Yeah, or you know, the thing is that if in fact by some stroke of luck you do get some insurance money on this disaster, your rates are going to be skyrocketed the next quarter, so you won't be able to afford insurance anymore going forward. Just like in Katrina disaster, everyone can't afford flood insurance in New Orleans anymore. The rates were jacked up, so the rates for insurance are going to go a lot higher with every single one of these disasters. So the insurance industry, which is the backbone of capitalism, is going out of business.
Yeah, look, I mean, down the road, folks, you're not getting your Social Security, you're not getting your insurance. All you're getting is a forced labor camp unless we throw these people out. Mike, anything else?
Yes, okay, I guess I'll ask this question for you because I want to try to squeeze in some for both. For you, Alex, do you think that it would be easy for the police state to confiscate guns from people as it was for them in New Orleans?
No, because they had I'm going to let you go. I appreciate the call, Mike. You can call back later with other calls if you want tomorrow or so. That was an isolated incident. They had the cover of the disaster to do it. It was a beta test, a laboratory test, to see if they could do it and how it would sell the public. It didn't go well for them. They're just going to do stuff like turn the money off, let everybody riot, then the public will beg to turn their guns in. Max Kaiser?
Yeah, agreed. I have an idea for America, okay? Start a new 12-step program. It's called Goldman Sachs Anonymous. Everyone gets together in a church basement, and they go the 12 steps of Goldman Sachs Anonymous, that we are powerless over Goldman Sachs. Now, it sounds a bit glib, but on the other hand, it's a way for people to reach out to their neighbor, because one thing that's going to get people through this crisis is it's going to be neighbor to neighbor. So get to know your neighbors. Get to know the people around you, and because that's going to be key to your survival, I think. And, it could bring people together, unfortunately, in a crisis, but generally that's what happens.
Absolutely.
You know?
Let's go to one more caller here. David in Michigan, you're on the air with Max Kaiser.
Hey, great discussion, guys. One question, I'll be brief with it. Because China owns so much of our treasury bills and because the trade deficit is so high, what role do you think that China's going to play in this post-economic meltdown? I mean, Alex, you know as well as I do that this country is New World Order's dream. They'd love to run every country like this. So, I mean, after it's all said and done and the dust settles, are we going to be, slaves to the Chinese Empire?
I think this is going to hurt the Chinese as well. I think they're going to have their hands full there. Most economists say if China ever gets down to 7% unemployment, they'd melt down. Or if their growth drops to 6%, they're dead meat. Max Kaiser?
Who took the Bank of China public 2 years ago in the biggest IPO in the history of the world?
Tell us.
Answer? Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Goldman Sachs, Hank Paulson is there. He made something like 14 trips to China during this last year at Goldman Sachs. He is completely in China's pocket.
That's right. He was the Goldman Sachs guy. That was his first big job there decades ago, was Goldman Sachs' minion in China.
You know, his first big job was he was working for Richard Nixon.
That's
in
right.
Washington. And he was definitely with China. They've got that huge IPO. And, I think that China has said that they're transitioning out of dollars into gold as well. They have to be careful because they
well, Cheney got out of dollars 2 years ago. I mean, everybody's moving to Dubai, I guess. Why is Dubai, Max, the place to be for the elites?
No extradition law.
There goes your answer. We're going to talk behind scenes just for the internet audience and then let Max Kaiser go because I've got to air at least most of this 30 minutes, and tomorrow I'll air more and comment on it. But I promised to have people come in and edit this 4 hours down to 30 minutes, so that is coming up. So we appreciate Max Kaiser joining us, maxkaiser.com. That's it for the full interview. We'll talk for 4 minutes behind the scenes and then come out with the audio clip. Here we go. Okay, Max, again, let's take a few more calls here. Kevin in New York. Kevin, you're on the air with Max Kaiser. Go ahead. Come on, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Earth to Kevin.
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
This is with regards to the conversation they had with Salente a little earlier ago with and how the government is consolidating and the is a command and control type thing. And I'd just like to reference that in terms of a new article by Naomi Klein in Rolling Stone, in the new Chauff, and she referred to the Bank of New York Mellon as being the kind of general contractor for the bailout. So, just two images here. One is that the government is consolidating the corporations, and the other is that the corporations are consolidating or privatizing the government. And your comments, and I'll take them off air.
It's just a mass raping. I mean, government, corporations at the top, it's all one animal, and it's just total booty. It's total just grabbing, stealing, gobbling, laughing, giggling. It's just Nero-esque insanity. Max Kaiser?
Well, it's balance sheet consolidation. You know, for example, when Bear Stearns blew up, the fact is that Bear Stearns wasn't the problem case. J.P. Morgan was the problem. J.P. Morgan had unbelievable amounts of derivative contracts with no counterparty able to satisfy. And so what they did was they blew up Bear Stearns to get rid of the counterparty that could make claims against J.P. Morgan. J.P. Morgan assassinated Bear Stearns for their own good. That company was assassinated.
That's what a lot of experts...
You see a lot of this consolidation of balance sheets in the banking industry. So Bank A goes to Bank B and says, oh, we've got these risks, you've got those risks, these assets. You know, when I was working on Wall Street, we used to do a thing called swapping dead books. So if I'm a broker and I'm working at one brokerage firm and I've blown up a lot of customers, I can go across the street to the broker of the other brokerage firm who's blown up a lot of customers, and we swap each other's blown up customers. Then I call up his blown up customers and I say, hey, you know, I got a great stock tip for you. I already know his name, his brokerage account, his social security number, and I know what stocks he's owned, and I know how much he's lost. And I can just put into my pitch, well, I think you could make X amount of money, and I hope you didn't buy this other stock last year. That was last year's loser. And the meanwhile, this broker who I swapped dead books is doing the same thing at his firm. So now you're seeing banks do that with each other. They're swapping each other's dead clients and dead bonds for fees, and it's just another chapter in this huge Ponzi scheme.
And the government's going to come out and scalp the public to feed it to the bankers who sit there like 800-pound children gobbling our society. Daniel in Texas, last caller for Max Kaiser. These callers are really taking their time today. Daniel, go ahead.
They're in shock.
Yes. I would like to ask Mike Kaiser, why is the construct trying to destroy the middle class and at the same time trying to give us this massive superhighway? Who's going to be buying all the goods that they ship in?
Well, after they consolidate everything, they'll start the economy back over again. And, you know, they want to tax all the roads, and those will be multinational corridors. Mr. Kaiser?
Right. But if the toll booths on those roads are not going to be owned by Americans. You know, Americans spent generations building an infrastructure, roads, bridges, and tunnels, and they should get the fees on the toll booths. But those toll booths are being sold to our foreign creditors in China.
Yep. Hey, we're out of time, Daniel, and I'm sorry to Rob and George and everybody else. Call back next time Kaiser's on. You'll go to the head of the line. Max Kaiser, maxkaiser.com. I want to really thank you for having me on the show, and you've got my office number or Trey's email if you want me on that 28th. And if I don't, and if I can't make it for that, or if you can't have me on, then I'll be glad to come on to the second one or whatever. And thanks for spending time with us, Max.
Thanks, Alex. Great show.
Appreciate you coming on. MaxKaiser.com. Take care. All right, there goes Max Kaiser from Paris, where my wife wants to move, where we never will move. But all right, here we go. Okay, we're going to go ahead and go for this segment for the rest of the show with 30 minutes. We may not even get to all of this. Yeah, I really should just play this tomorrow and then stop and comment on it, but because there's so many facets to it. But this is Kashkari being grilled. This is only 30 minutes of 4 hours of the hearings last Friday. Tomorrow I'm going to play some more of this in the end of it and then comment more on it. But here it is, ladies and gentlemen. So stay with us.
Now, I heard your testimony, and I have to say that I'm a little bit surprised because it appears that testimony was prepared before Mr. Paulson's statement about the purposes of the Troubled Asset Relief Program. And the Secretary's decision not to purchase mortgage assets through his decision, hasn't Treasury rendered obsolete entire sections of the Emergency Economic Stabilization Act? Because there was no question about congressional intention that Treasury use an asset purchase program to mitigate foreclosures. You have a response to that?
We worked very hard with both houses of Congress to design the legislation to provide a lot of flexibility. And we and the other regulators are using every tool at our disposal to get at this problem, stabilizing the financial system as well as helping homeowners. And Secretary Paulson and Chairman Bernanke and at Treasury, we have been looking at how do we deploy these resources to first stabilize the system so that we can get credit flowing to the entire economy, to our communities. And so Secretary Paulson made the determination that the best way to get at this problem, given how rapidly markets were deteriorating, was to lead with capital. But that doesn't mean that we don't care about other aspects that are very, very important. We're trying to use the right tool to solve the right problem.
Well, it would appear, Mr. Kashkari, that Secretary Paulson has gutted Section 109 of the Act, which requires Treasury to undertake specified steps to mitigate foreclosures with respect to the mortgages it acquires, including working with other federal regulators to directly or to identify troubled assets to acquire to further loan modification efforts. How do you reconcile this policy reversal with Congress's expectations laid out in the statute?
Sure. Congressman, there are other sections of the Act, as an example, that direct other government agencies, whether it's FHFA in its conservatorship of the GSEs, FHA, the Federal Reserve, to the extent that they own or control mortgages, to take action. So let me give you an example, Congressman, because this point is very important. If we had spent all $700 billion buying loans, that would be around 3 million loans or so, depending on the value of the loans, but around 3 million, 3.5 million. Instead, if you look at the actions that we took on Tuesday, by using the GSEs to now set a new industry standard for loan servicing, when the GSEs set a standard, other servicers around the country use that standard, whether it's for GSE loans or for other loans. Those actions and that protocol has the ability to influence servicing for almost every loan in America. There are 55 million residential mortgages in America.
Sir,
we could touch 3 million or 55.
So it has the ability, but the problem is that Treasury, by taking this action that de-emphasizes loan modification, has essentially sent a signal to all the banks that this isn't particularly what you're concerned about. I mean, even though you may maintain, oh, this is in there, look, I've got the Act. Here's the purposes. I want to spell them out. The purposes of the Act are, and number two, to ensure that such authority and facilities are used in a manner that protects home values. And then it goes on to Section B, preserves home ownership. Now, the Treasury just basically cut that out of the bill. And what we have here is a situation where banks are hoarding the money that they're getting from the TARP. They're using the money to purchase other banks. We still have a credit freeze. I'm looking at your testimony. You're saying credit markets were largely frozen, denying financial institutions, businesses, consumers access to vital funding and credit. Financial institutions were under extreme pressure. Investor confidence in our system was dangerously low. Hello, are we in a different universe here? It's the same situation prevails today. And yet your testimony acts as though, well, we're just merrily skipping along our way here. We've got millions of people threatened with losing their homes. And the underlying problem is that banks are now increasing their interest rates in order to get more customers. Think about this now. It's counterintuitive to your Troubled Asset Relief Program. You're now saying we're going to put the money into the banks, into these financial institutions, shore up finance capital. Well, finance capital now is seeing that the only way they can survive is to start to raise their interest rates and give away some of the money that they're giving, that the government's giving to them. At the same time, you're picking winners and losers. How do you reconcile these policy reversals? And why won't Treasury act swiftly and forcefully to maximize the system?
I'm gonna chase the sky forever. But the woman and the stallion and the wind, and the sun is gonna burn into a cinder.
At the same time, you're picking winners and losers. How do you reconcile these policy reversals? You know, and why won't Treasury act swiftly and forcefully to maximize assistance to homeowners under TARP and play a significant role in modification of home loans in at risk of imminent default? Why not?
Congressman, I personally have spent most of the past year and a half focused on ways to try to reach and help homeowners. That's been my primary focus within Treasury. And it's
why? Well, hasn't the Secretary listened to you? Is he? I mean, do you feel frustrated that your position isn't being vindicated?
Congressman, the Secretary is passionate about this as well. And permit me.
Passionate about what?
Helping homeowners, Congressman.
He is? Where? What country?
We are, Congressman, we are using all the tools available to the federal government to get at the credit crisis and try to help homeowners. Let me give you an example, please. We have different tools.
Mr. Kashkari, I really respect you being here, but I'm looking at a bill, Section 109, that spells all this out. This secretary just essentially took some scissors and cut it out and threw it away. Now, you know, maybe this is just some kind of a game to some people in the administration. They're on their way out of office, and they just feel they can do whatever they want, pick winners and lose in the market. We've got millions of people losing their home. Mr. Isaac came to my district and saw some of our old neighborhoods, how they're just falling apart. And we've got people that are holding on, hoping against hope that somebody's going to help them. We've got millions of people in foreclosure, and if I read it right, Mr. Issa, in California there are millions more at risk of foreclosure with these jumbo mortgages and the Alt-A mortgages in 09 and 10. And all of a sudden, the Treasury sent a signal to the banks, forget about it. We're going to give you the money that you want, and you do what you want with it. Unless you direct it specifically, it's not going to happen. So tell me again, why isn't it happening? Not how passionate the Treasury Secretary is.
Congressman, I believe it is happening. If you'll permit me, I'll walk you through.
Please go ahead.
The four banking regulators. The Treasury is not a regulatory agency. The banking regulators supervise the banks that are getting this capital. The four banking regulators put out a joint statement that's going to govern how they supervise these banks. One of the things that they're going to be looking very closely at and watching, not just executive compensation, not just dividend policies, making sure lending is getting out there in our communities, and foreclosure mitigation efforts. The banking regulators are the supervisors of these institutions, and they've now put out a joint statement saying exactly what they're going to be looking at in their supervisory capacity. There is no one better positioned in the country than the banking regulators to do that. Treasury's not in a position to do that, but the banking regulators absolutely are. We've done had numerous initiatives to try to get at the root of this problem. But the most important benefit, Congressman, for homeowners is that we didn't allow the financial system to collapse. Imagine how many foreclosures we would have if the banking system had collapsed and mortgage finance was not available to our homeowners. That's the biggest benefit that we've been able to achieve. And Chairman, we are not out of the woods yet, and I didn't mean to suggest that in my testimony, but I can walk through numerous statistics looking at the beginning of a healing credit market, which is the first step to getting through this problem.
Well, maybe you know, see, again, this might be a philosophical divide here. Because on one hand, the Bush administration and Treasury seems to indicate that the trickle-down effect, give the money to banks, and they're going to loosen up money and credit and start to flow, and people are going to be protected. On the other hand, there's another model which says create a system where you get pools of mortgage-backed securities the government takes control over, and you direct loan modification, you know, lowering interest, lowering principal, extending the terms of payments to keep people in their home. One model may keep several big banks afloat, but risk millions of people losing their home anyway, and the other model keeps people in their homes. See, you're talking about an if-come model that's based on the charitable sentiment, seemingly, of major Wall Street banks. But the truth of the matter is, if you don't get the money into the grassroots and help on loan modification, the banks aren't going to get their money to begin at the end anyhow, because you know one model percolates up. Money goes to the banks, help move money in Wall Street. The other one, you have this idea of some kind of trickle-down. A trickle never gets down. Everybody understands that. And yet, Treasury seems to cling to this notion that if only the regulators now do their job. Are you kidding me? I mean, regulators. Look, Treasury has been given almost omnipotent power here. And you have, unfortunately, you know, not exercised in the interest of homeowners. Do you believe that Congress would have passed the EESA if it understood that none of the TARP funds would have been earmarked for asset purchase and subsequent mortgage loan modifications? I mean, this looks like classic bait and switch, Mr. Issa.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kashari, I appreciate that you were in on those negotiations with leadership. The majority of Republicans voted against it once and twice. Mr. Kucinich wasn't in the meeting where Secretary Paulson came in with the Vice President and Fed Chairman Bernanke and made all these assurances that there was absolutely a critical, immediate need to get rid of the corrosive derivative products, you know, all the different names for this, and you know, ubiquitous, you know, sub-S retraded credit default swap, blah, 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 blah. Okay? But they talked about them as though they knew what the hell they were. You got the money and you immediately said, what items, what auction? Would you please respond to, under oath, when did you go from what you told members of Congress in open and closed sessions was the absolute reason to have this money immediately to buy a specific group of assets, about $350 billion in the U.S., about $350 billion held by other countries and other funds outside the U.S. Those assets were what you said was locking up and destroying the market. When did you first hear that that money was not going to be spent that way?
Congressman, the day on October 3rd, the day that the Congress passed and the President signed the legislation, we immediately created several policy teams developing asset purchase programs, all the details, both mortgage-backed securities.
Now, that wasn't the question.
No, I'm please forgive me.
I want to know the time and date because I want to know whether Congress was lied to or whether there was a team all along that had an alternate, one or more people that had an alternate idea of how this money would be spent.
Congressman, forgive me, on October 3rd, we created a team.
No, that's not answering program. The question. And here's the reason I'm asking a very directed question. You can create the team. You can put together all that.
Okay.
You know, look, people, you know, Circuit City, and I sold them for 20-plus years, so I'm very sensitive to the trouble they're in. Circuit City announced that they were closing 155 stores and began that process. They never announced they were filing Chapter 11. But all of us looked and said, look, they're not going to renegotiate walking away from 155 leases without a bankruptcy. So in our minds, we knew, you know, it's a question of time. Well, they don't tell you one thing, they do tell you another. You never in any good faith explained why you formed these organizations, and now you say it's hopeless and impossible to buy these products that were the entire reason. You can't have the success for doing something different than you said without explaining why you didn't buy one of those assets. And when did somebody figure out, by date, when did you first learn that we were not going to buy these assets because we couldn't value them properly?
Well, first of all, Congressman, it's not a question of our ability to value them. The decision was made by Secretary Paulson very recently, earlier this week, late last week.
Secondly, it has been said that your purchases of $250 billion plus of preferred stock is at a price that would not be market competitive, meaning you paid too much. Tell me why I'm to believe for a minute that those preferred stocks that you bought, you could resell today for anything close. Remember, the market has improved. You've said that. Tell me what the profit would be on those preferred stocks if you began putting even $1 of them into the market today.
Congressman, I don't know what the price would be.
Okay, well, you're from Goldman Sachs.
I used to work there.
Okay, well, I'm from Directed Electronics. You're from your last job. If you tell me that you've improved the market, then by definition, those assets, if bought at par, have appreciated. Isn't that true?
Well, there are many, again, with deep respect, Congressman, there are many different markets. There's the equity market. There's the credit markets. I think there are strong signs. I can walk you through data showing the credit markets improving. The equity markets, we purchase equity. The equity
you
markets are struggling.
You purchased a debt instrument.
Well, it's tier one capital, Congressman.
You know, we can go ring around the rosy here, but you're here today because Congress is feeling that you played a bait-and-switch game, and you're not convincing anyone that you haven't. But let's just try to go to the fundamentals. You bought preferred stock.
Yes, sir.
Preferred stock is a debt instrument. You're capitalizing the company, but you're capitalizing with a debt instrument. Those instruments trade. I have BB&T. I have, I have a number of debt instruments of that sort. They have, in fact, appreciated from the time you bought till today in various portfolios. So I'm looking at those, and I'm following a lot more of those kinds of instruments. They have appreciated. So my question to you today, under oath, as someone who should know about this, is, are your purchases above par today, in your opinion?
Candidly, Congressman, I don't know. We have an independent valuation firms that are going to provide regular reporting on the current value.
Regular reporting starting when? You're here today. Do you have any regular reporting from the day you bought them till today?
We've published the reports to the Treasury website within 48 hours of completing the transactions on the terms. And then we're in the process. Just yesterday, the equity asset manager solicitations concluded, and we've received, I think, hundreds of proposals. We'll be engaging the equity asset managers, who will be providing us the valuation services and the reporting to the Congress on a go-forward basis.
Well, wouldn't it be reasonable for us to believe here today that if, in fact, you have improved the market, that those assets that you purchase, we'll call them equity since they're a hybrid, have appreciated?
I think they'd be reasonable if relative to the day that we bought them.
Okay,
I think
so if we find out on the next report, which I hope is forthcoming, and we will be looking for it, that they are below par, then in fact you paid too much, right?
Well, again, it depends, Congressman, what our objective was. Our objective was to create a program that would encourage thousands of banks across our country to voluntarily apply and to use the capital. And so we intentionally made it attractive for them to want to apply.
So you believe here today that you had authority to subsidize banks, including providing them this capital at a below par, a below fair market, of a market that should have existed but didn't exist?
Well, Congressman, as you know, the market when we did this was, there was no market. Most banks couldn't raise private capital.
Yeah, but we're in a better market today. You understand, one of the reasons for the question is you've thrown $350 billion, including AIG and so on, out there. You're coming back for another $350 billion. If, in fact, what we discover, and I believe here today, is that your $350 billion, and let's just look at $250 billion, we'll leave AIG, which is a whole other can of worms, aside. If that money, in fact, is a subsidy arriving at a price below the fair market price, thus causing banks to choose you, including banks in my district, choose you instead of other capital, all you've really done is give them a discount capital. Now, the reason I ask that is, how large is the capital base necessary for the banking industry in America? Do you have any idea? Isn't it about $55 trillion, plus or minus?
In terms of assets or capital?
The size of the market, if you will.
That sounds about right. I don't have the numbers on my fingertips.
Okay, so you'd have to put several trillion dollars in to be the owner, if you will, of that base.
Of all the capital.
Even with the multiple. So the reason I'm asking all this, and I know I've got to yield back I've extended my time, and just follow up one last time. If all you're doing is moving your money in at a discount to banks and entities like American Express and GMAC and everybody else who's rushing to become a bank holding company today as a result of this deal, then at the end of the day, we will have bought stock at too high a price or debt at too low an interest rate, however you want to look at these preferred instruments, and we will have moved people to other capital where they can get the returns they want, because you're competing at a price that the market wouldn't accept the loans. You're giving them a deal that distorts the market. Isn't that true based on your background at Goldman?
Well, Congressman, when you have a market that is dysfunctional, any deal that we would put in, because we'd be the only provider of capital, would by definition be better than the non-available capital in the middle of a crisis. So yes, we did offer attractive terms to stabilize the market.
Mr. Chairman, I might note that Warren Buffett weighed into this with billions of dollars. Wells did a deal. There have been dollars done. But those dollars, I believe, are not coming in until the United States quits subsidizing in competition to private sector dollars that would ask for a better return and probably, no, undoubtedly would say that dividends and excess compensation would have to be curtailed until they were getting their returns.
I yield back. I thank the gentleman, and, you know, there was a reason why I voted with the gentleman twice on this same question, the bailout. We now recognize for a period of 10 minutes Mr. Cummings of Maryland. Mr. Cummings, you may proceed with your questioning.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kashkari, I must say that as I have sat here listening to your answers, I have been disappointed. I think that you have kind of skipped around the issues here, and I say that because when I saw pictures of you, I thought, you know, I said, this looks like a guy that'll be a straight shooter. So I'm going to ask you some questions, sir. And I don't say that trying to embarrass you. I say it because life is short, and I don't have time to hear ring around the rosy answers. Let me go back to something that the chairman said. He talked about how, whether you understood that when foreclosures take place, he said, he asked you, did you realize that it also affects the housing in the communities? In other words, you sell a foreclosed house, it's lower price value goes down. Let me ask you this follow-up question to that. You also understand that when price value goes down, local government is affected because it's based upon, their tax dollars are based upon that. And it just goes on and on and on. So it's a very serious problem that we are dealing with here. Do you, and I guess what I'm, I always, every time I sit in these hearings, I always try to put myself in the position of my constituents who are watching this. Because when I come home, hopefully I'll get home about 3 o'clock today, I live in the inner city of Baltimore, and believe me, when I go to the supermarket tonight, when I go take my daughter to the movies this evening, I promise you people are going to ask me about you. And what they're going to say is, Cummings, we watched the hearing. We heard that guy, Kashkari. But I'm losing my house today. And they're going to ask the question. They're going to say, well, we heard about the Citigroup thing where I've got to be 3 months behind before I can get help. And we heard that guy, Kashkari. We know he's in charge of the $700 billion. What can he tell me today? I do not want a handout. I just want a hand. I want to pay my mortgage. I just need a little help because this Bush administration and its policies has put me in a position where I don't have a job. Or I'm now working a part-time job. Help me. Did I miss something, Cummings? What can Mr. Kashkari, did he say something to help me know how I can help my family? That's what they're asking. They are in pain. Now, I'm giving you, you're on TV. You're the man. I don't know how much we're paying you, but you're our employee. And I'm asking you to look in the camera, somebody back here, and tell those people what you are doing. They hear about the bailouts of Wall Street. They hear that their tax dollars are being paid to AIG and these people going on these junkets and all that. They hear all of that. But they feel like it's ring around the rosy. They hear a lot of nice talk, but they're still being put out of their houses. They hear Paulson get up and talk of all this wonderful stuff, but they still are worried about whether they're going to come home and their stuff is going to, all of their furniture is going to be on the street. Those are the people that I represent. So I'm begging you to please tell me exactly what is being done. And then I want you to do something else. With Fannie Mae announcing Monday that it had lost $29 billion, and you talked about all the wonderful things that Fannie Mae is going to do, I'm wondering how that affects. I know we got $100 billion that can go into their coffers, but how does that affect them helping that guy that I just talked about? And I'm saying, I mean, I hear you guys talk about the urgency of the market and all of that, but something tells me that you need, and I think this is where the chairman is coming from. You know, we can fix Wall Street, but it seems like there's a bucket down there at the bottom. These people that are being thrown out of their houses, it's like a bucket with a hole in it. So whatever you do for Wall Street, if you're not saving these mortgages and helping people stay afloat, and by the way, saving some pain, I mean, it makes no sense. And so help me with that, because my people don't believe that you all care about them. And I hate to tell you that, but they don't. And they're angry.
Let me say two things, please.
All right, folks, we just rolled through the breaks for the Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv viewers. But this will go about a minute or two over. When the radio show ends on the internet only, we'll finish up the clip with Kucinich. There's even more I'm going to play tomorrow, and then we'll be able to take your calls on it and comment. One thing I keep forgetting to plug, PrisonPlanet.tv, for this month into December, you can get 5 months free right now at PrisonPlanet.tv. 20-plus films that I've made, hundreds of other documentaries, my weekly TV reports, in-studio reports, extras, just so much. And it's all in high quality at PrisonPlanet.tv. You can then burn it to disk and give it to friends, family, and neighbors. People are really waking up right now. They're ready to hear the truth right now. And PrisonPlanet.tv is an armory in the fight against the New World Order in the information war. So don't forget PrisonPlanet.tv. And give it as a gift. Give them a PrisonPlanet.tv membership. Just create a passcode and a username, and then give that to friends and family in a card and use the passcode for yourself. That's my little present to you. You can share the passcode with a couple folks if you'd like to. But that said, let's go back to the hearing, and then when it's over, rebroadcast will start at Infowars.com with Max Keiser today. We also had Gerald Celente. It was amazing on. So that's all coming up in the refeeds at Infowars.com. But we're going to go out of the show with the clip and into overdrive for the Infowars.com listeners. Here we go.
Let me say two things, please. One, the legislation that we asked for, we asked for it to try to stabilize and prevent a complete financial collapse of our financial system. And that was not to help Wall Street. That was to help every American. Please, sir, please.
No, let me tell you something. I understand that. That's why I voted for it.
Yes, sir.
But let me tell you, when we gave them money, when we gave the banks money, they still weren't loaning any money.
Well, let's talk about that, because we are passionate about getting the banks to loan money in our communities to help our small businesses and to help our homeowners. First of all, we allocated $250 billion for banks of all sizes across the country, and just about half the money is out the door today. I think we're going to approve another 20 banks today, large and small, across the country. Potentially thousands of banks are applying, and it's going to take a few months to process the thousands of transactions to get the money out the door. So we're working as fast as we can. We're working around the clock to process all these to get the money in our community banks. It's not a stimulus. It's not an economic growth plan. It is an economic stabilization plan to stabilize the financial system. And so I just want to respectfully set expectations that we are trying to use these resources to stabilize the system for every American. But we also have real economic challenges that we all need to work through.
Mr. Kashkari, in the neighborhood I grew up in inner city of Baltimore, one of the things that you tried to do was make sure that you were not considered a chump. And what chump meant was that you didn't want people to see you as just somebody they could get over on. And I'm just wondering how you feel about an AIG giving $503 million worth of bonuses out of one hand and accepting $154 billion from hard-working taxpayers. I'm trying to make sure you get it. You know? I mean, and you know what really bothers me? Is because all these other people who are lined up, they say, well, Is Kashkari a chump? We can just go in there, and I'm not saying they are. I don't know. We can go in there. We'll get some money. And you know what AIG did? They even will tell you they're coming back for some more. And they have the nerve to grant some $503 million worth of bonuses. I'm just wondering, do you all say to yourself, boy, this doesn't look too good. And I'm wondering about them, if it was strictly from a PR standpoint. And I know nothing about PR, but one thing I do know, I wouldn't want to be asking my friend for some money to help me stay afloat. And if I didn't get the money, I'd be out of business. And then for my friend, I say, okay, I'm really struggling. Then my friend, who can barely afford to go to McDonald's, then walks around and sees me in a restaurant costing $150 a meal. There's absolutely something wrong with that picture. And so I wonder, does that go through your head? Or is it just me? Am I missing something?
No, Congressman, I saw the same images that you saw of the parties, and I share your frustration with that.
What about the $503 million worth of bonuses?
Let's talk about that, because I heard about that this morning, I think as you did, in the paper. And I asked my colleagues to check on it and say, what is this? Because I was outraged when I saw the headlines. What was explained to me is that this was money, apparently, and I'm not defending it, but this is money that had already been paid to employees that was set aside in a separate fund that they would get if they left AIG. And we need AIG to keep running as a company so that it can sell off its assets and pay back the taxpayers. And so from what's been explained to me is that this money that had already been paid but set aside to the employees was now released so that the employees did not have an incentive to quit, because we need them to keep working so that they can sell off the assets and pay back the taxpayers.
We need them to keep working, but guess what? There are a whole lot of people that can replace them, because there are so many people losing their jobs. This is an employer's market today.
That's true, sir.
Come on now.
No, I'm
there are people, I guarantee you, there are people who are lined up saying, please quit so I can get a job.
If I may take the prerogative as chair to say, I don't think anyone questions, Mr. Kashkari, that you're working hard. Our question is who you're working for.
All right, folks, that is it for this transmission. Again, rebroadcast starts now with Gerald Celente, Max Kaiser, and many others on the internet at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.tv on those exclusive streams. And we'll be back on the AM and FM dial on stations as they rear across the country, and back live tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. with other big guests, your calls, and important news. I'm Alex Jones signing off. Great job with the crew and the sponsors. The resistance will continue.